Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., and here every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., here on WGN, and it is Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That is one artist, three songs. Get your requests, and now we'll play them later. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up on the show, an old friend of the show, Jerry Vassalatos, is going to be here. He's a filmmaker. He directed a film called Solstice, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary restoration, and we'll talk about that. And he also is the Chicago producer for the 48-hour film project, and we'll tell you all about that, too. Good guy all the way around, and we'll tell you all about Solstice and how you can get the big 25th anniversary restoration of it. So that's coming up after 1:30. And then Ian Schur is going to join us. He's our good buddy. He's the news editor in charge CNET.com. CNET.com is a terrific website for all of your tech needs and questions and stories and innovations and reviews of tech. He's going to join us after the 2 o'clock news. Lots of tech stuff to talk about with Ian. Always a fun time to have with him, so we'll have him on as well. The Grammy nominations were announced yesterday morning, and there have been some surprises and some snubs and some good ones, and we're going to go through all the Grammy nominations. We're going to talk about some of the people who have won at least Grammys, and we'll do some 15 Grammys, and we'll do some Grammy talk as well. So we'll do a little music and Grammy talks. That's coming up too. And of course, we have this story that I want to get to, and hopefully we can get to it this morning. It's amazing celebrity connections you didn't know existed. Some of these are just wild completely. So that's coming up as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also for your Triple Play Thursday request, 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. So like us right now, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And subscribe to our podcast. Lots of people subscribe to our podcast. We thank you for that very much. It's a great way to listen to the show if you're not up in the overnight hours. Every single second of every single show is podcast, and you can subscribe. It's free. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, WGNradio.com as well. Subscribe. It's free. It will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. All right. So that's here on this Thursday morning, this Triple Play Thursday. That's what's coming up on the show. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah. Did you watch The Masked Singer last night?
I did not. I was cooking dinner for my beloved because it was our anniversary yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
7 years.
7 years?
Yeah.
You guys have been dating. Well, you were only 26.
Yep.
So you were kids when you started dating.
Yeah, we met first semester of freshman year at Loyola. And it was one of those things. It was literally love at first sight.
Oh.
It was one of those things.
That's better. I met her. She's lovely.
Yeah. She thought I had cute ears.
Cute ears.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's something. Well, congratulations. Oh. Masked Singer was, I won't give away who got kicked off, but I can't believe the person who got kicked off because I knew who it was, who was underneath the mask. And I know who two other people are underneath the mask for sure. And one of them was blatantly obvious tonight. one of them was like, well, no, actually, the one that actually got cut was completely obvious and has been for a couple of weeks. Like, you can't mistake this person's voice.
Yeah. And were the clues really giveaway? Like,
couple were.
Yeah.
But there's the other person. It's the leopard. The leopard sang tonight, and it's amazing to me that nobody is guessing who that is. So, yeah, I don't know. But
you're a lot better at the. I have a terrible time trying to guess who it is.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't have a thing for voices.
I'm really bad for the first couple of weeks, but then when they start, you know, you get to hear them a few times, and they also every week they do a clues package where they give you clues, and that you remember the clues from the week before, you remember all that stuff, so you can put that all together. It gets a little bit easier to identify or try and figure out who the voice is. As the weeks go on. But this leopard is completely obvious to me. Completely obvious.
You've pegged the leopard.
Yeah. I'm not giving anything away when I say that Joel McHale comes back. And he's hilarious on it.
I miss him. I miss him on TV.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's great. Well, it's great too because, like, it, you know, he rips apart Ken Jeong the whole time. So, because they were both on Community, and so it's great to see him just tear Ken Jeong apart. So, anyway, it was entertaining. I will tell you that it was very entertaining. So, all right, that's what we got one more day here, and then I got a vacation coming up.
Yeah, you got a vacation coming up, and then I'll be hanging out for a few days.
I'm taking off the week of Thanksgiving. I'll be off after Friday morning show. I'll be off until the Monday morning into after Thanksgiving, so December 1st into the 2nd. So have a great Thanksgiving. I mean, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, tomorrow we got a great show, fun show. A couple of our great friends.
Oh, yes.
Jeff Tuckman's going to be on, and we'll have some. What are we giving away? Do we know?
It's going to be. Let me see here. He just told me yesterday.
Okay.
We're going to be giving away a Blu-ray DVD digital copy package of the fantastic Rocket Man.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yes, and it includes 75 minutes. Of bonus content.
Oh.
So a full, almost over an hour of bonus content for all the Elton John fans.
That's fantastic. I think that movie's great. I love that movie.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I was like, this is, if you're going to make an Elton John movie, it should look and sound like this.
And I think they took the right approach by making it sort of a fantasy musical. Oh, I mean, it's a musical. Yeah. They did not, it was not advertised as a musical.
No.
They advertised it as though it was going to be like Bohemian Rhapsody, and it's not at all, it's nothing like Bohemian Rhapsody.
It's more like Across the Universe than it is.
It is. Like it's absolutely, and it did remind me of Across the Universe. And so I thought it was great. So that's cool. We're giving Rocket Man away. So Jeff will be here in the first part of the show. And then after 2 o'clock, our lovely friend Esmeralda Leon is going to join us live in studio, and she's going to hang out for the whole rest of the show. She'll be here from 2 to 5, and we'll play some trivia games and have some fun with Esmeralda and catch up with her. So she'll be live in studio, and so will Jeff Tuckman tomorrow on our Friday show, plus all of the regular Friday features. So that's coming up tomorrow. Let's get into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
I'm doing very well.
Oh, that's good.
You know why the Bulls won?
Oh, they did.
I was watching the game for it. Yeah, it was nice. They handled their business tonight. 109-89 over Derrick Rose and the Bulls, the Pistons.
Oh, that must have been very gratifying
for them. Yeah, it was. And you know, right when Rose came into that game, he just it wasn't really him that took it over, but something, the gas just, I mean, the Bulls lost it, and they lost their lead, and but they got it back. And
yeah, well, they won soundly. That's a sizable win.
Right, right.
So, all right. Well, Lizzie, Vic, you're here, man.
Good to hear that Esmeralda will be here tomorrow.
She will. She'll be here. She'll be here tomorrow. Jeff Tuckman will be here tomorrow.
Exciting.
It's always great to have Esmeralda on.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
She's fantastic. I miss having her on every single morning. But we have her on. We try to have her on. She was away for a while, and we couldn't get the date set. Because we try to have her on at least once a month or at least every 3 weeks or something like that, to catch up. So, but she'll be here tomorrow, so that'll be fun. And Vic, you'll be here tomorrow, right?
Yes, sir.
Are you working on Thanksgiving week?
I do work some of it. I'll work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I'll take the last few days off.
Okay.
So remind me tomorrow before you leave.
Yeah.
I got to say, see you next year, man. You got to say that.
No, I'm not off till January.
No, I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah, we got one more month left. What the? I'm going to just turn my mic off now.
Yeah. he just walked away. He turned his mic off and walked away.
Real professional stuff.
Oh, that was funny. All right. Why don't we take a break, okay? And we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, you know the brawl that happened between the Browns and the Steelers last Thursday? Well, there's a funny story connected to it. And also, they just had the 2019 Beard and Mustache Championships, which is always very entertaining. And they posted it. There's a website that'll guide you to that posted some portraits of some of the craziest facial hair and what these guys do during the mustache and beard championships. It's just fantastic. So we got a couple of quick stories to talk about. And then after 1:30, we'll talk with Jerry Vassalatos about the 25th anniversary of his film Solstice and more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and for Triple Play Thursday requests. And we'll come back and talk about these couple of stories before 1:30.
Someday you got mud on your face. Big disgrace. Somebody better put your bag into your place. We will rock you. Sing it. We will rock you. Everybody,
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. here on WGN. And, so, it's a Thursday night, Triple Play Thursday. Here, get your request in now. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And coming up after 1:30, Jerry Vassalatos is going to join us. We got some stuff to talk about, including the 25th anniversary of his film Solstice. So that is coming up. And also, Ian Schur is going to join us from CNET for some tech talk. That'll be after 2. So that's some of the stuff that's coming up on the show. Okay, so I think everybody has seen multiple times the footage of the brawl that took place on the field last Thursday night between the Browns and the Steelers. And it's one of the craziest things I've ever seen, you know, happen on a professional football field or a professional field of any kind. But there's a funny thing that's attached to it now. A local clothing company sells Pittsburgh Started It t-shirts after the fight at Browns Steelers game. So this is out of Cleveland, of course. A local clothing designer is selling t-shirts in response to the fight that broke out between Cleveland Browns defensive end Myles Garrett and Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph at Thursday night's game. GV Art and Design is selling a t-shirt that reads, Pittsburgh Started It. And, of course, it's in Cleveland brown and orange. That's pretty funny. When I first read the headline of this, that they're selling a thing that the company that says Pittsburgh Started It, I thought maybe it was a tie-in to how we stole that word that came from Pittsburgh. Oh. And I thought it was their response to Chicago, that word. You know, that remember that show, JAG? The TV show?
Yeah.
All right, you know what the opposite of on is?
I do.
Okay, put those together. That's the word.
Ah, gotcha.
And we've made it poetry here in Chicago, but it did truly start in Pittsburgh. So I thought when I first read the headline, I was like, oh, man, Pittsburgh started it. I thought it was a shirt that was designed to take the power away from Chicago and let everybody know that classic word, my favorite word in the English language, which just got it put into the dictionary. That's what I thought it was, but in fact, it's about the Steelers-Browns game. Here's what they say. In no way do we condone the actions of Miles and what he did, the company wrote on their website, but we will never forget. Pittsburgh started it. Show your support of a good guy who made one bad mistake with this new tee. The Pittsburgh Started It tee are selling for $28.
That's a little much.
That's a lot much.
That better be a really soft t-shirt.
The Pittsburgh Started a t-shirt starts, they sell for $28, and they are available in sizes from XS to 3XL. So they've got everything covered.
Do they have extra medium?
Extra medium. You can purchase them online in select GV stores. There's a link on this website. Garrett was suspended indefinitely following Thursday night's game with the Pittsburgh Steelers. In the final 8 seconds, Garrett and Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph became involved in an on-field brawl. It escalated when Garrett pulled off Rudolph's helmet and hit him in the head with it. If his suspension is not reduced, it'll be the longest for an on-field incident in NFL history. So, suspended indefinitely. I think that's a pretty apropos punishment,
yeah,
considering how crazy that incident was and ripping off the guy's helmet and smacking him in the head with it.
Yeah, Rudolph the sore head QB.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So, but anyway, Pittsburgh started at tees are available now. They're only $28.
For the low, low price.
For the low, low price.
$28.
$28. You can get yourself a Pittsburgh started at t-shirt.
You can be part of t-shirt history.
I think the funniest part of it is that it's in brown and orange. I think that's the funniest. That's the funniest part. I wonder how many of these will sell. You think Cleveland? You think Browns fans will buy them?
I think so. I don't know how, if it's going to be a sensation or anything, but I think you'll get some people who buy it and commemorate an interesting moment in football.
Browns fans have had a rough go of it though over the years.
Yeah, for
being a Browns fan is not an easy thing. I have a couple of really good friends from Cleveland who are from Cleveland, and every year they're just like, oh man.
I mean, we can commiserate. We had the Cubs for so long.
Right. Well, anyway, get your Pittsburgh started at t-shirts. Only $28. That's a bargain.
I wonder if it'll outsell any Chance the Snapper.
I have a Chance the Snapper t-shirt.
It's a great t-shirt.
Yeah.
Folks got that for you, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a Chance the Snapper t-shirt. That was fun while it lasted.
It was a great time.
Yeah.
And we could focus on something else for a little while.
Sure. All right, so the 2019 Beard and Mustache Championships took place. And I always love this stuff. You know Scott Miller?
Mm-hmm.
Scott Miller, who used to work here, he was Pete's producer for a while. And now he's got his own show on another station. He enters those things. Have you ever seen his facial hair?
I've seen his facial hair in regular mode.
You haven't seen it with the... You know, when they put the gel in it and all that stuff, when they shape it into incredible shapes. Yeah, Scott Miller takes this stuff very seriously, has entered the championships and many times, has won awards. He's got some very impressive facial hair when he wants to. But these guys in the Beard and Mustache Championships, it's insane. It's insane. If you go to petapixel.com, that's petapixel.com. You can see portraits of some of the Beard and Mustache Championship participants. And do you have a favorite?
Out of these guys?
Yeah.
There is a guy that's got like, it's all kind of tentacled around to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Like one side has nothing going on, but then there's a little facial hair, but he's all done it on the side in like these rings all across there. And I'm looking at Scott Miller right now. Jeez.
No, yeah.
Not bad.
No, I'm not kidding. He's the real deal. He's been doing it for a long time and he's entered these competitions and I know he's won some awards for being the facial hair dude that he is. But if you check it out, you got to see this. You should probably check this out because some of this stuff is just absolutely crazy. The stuff that they do with the facial hair, it's amazing. It truly is.
Some of them look like a squid.
I know. It's completely, I mean, it's pretty crazy. And it's a very specific art. And it's all real. You know, people, they pride themselves on saying, no, there's no extensions, there's no implants or anything like that. This is my facial hair. This is all my facial hair. And, yeah. But, here's what it says. As he does every year around this time, Las Vegas-based photographer Greg Anderson recently packed up his gear and traveled to the National Beard and Mustache Championships to capture some of the most entertaining portraits you get to see each year. This year's nationals were held at 350 Brewing in Tinley Park, Illinois. Oh, it was here. It was in Tinley Park.
In Tinley Park.
Ah. Oh. So the south suburbs got to hang out with the hair dudes. And while we didn't see anything quite as wild as the Incredibeard winner of the 2017 World Championships, these entries definitely didn't disappoint. from star-shaped creations to geometric patterns and beyond. You can check out some of our favorite portraits of the annual event. And I highly recommend it. I think the guy that the guy that looks like he's got an octopus attached to the bottom of his face is probably my favorite. And he's wearing like a top hat. And not only that, I also want to mention this. These guys go all out. The costumes that they wear for these portraits are pretty unbelievable. You know, they dress up in like suits and weird costumes and hats and all kinds of stuff. But I find this thing, I find this to be very entertaining. And I've had guys on in the past, not just knowing Scott Miller, but I've covered this on my show in the past over the years several times. And I find it to be very entertaining and really a lot of fun. Now, obviously, this is a visual thing, and I'm not going to try and describe or explain what these guys look like and what the facial hair and the artwork of this facial hair looks like. But you need to go to the website. It's Petapixel. PETA, petapixel.com, petapixel.com, and that topic right there, you can click onto the story and it'll pop you right to it. Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, Nick. Hey. One more subject I know something about.
Yeah, you've got very impressive facial hair.
14-inch beard, yeah. 25 years.
Yeah.
A couple years back, about 5 years back, they had a reality show on TV called Whisker Wars.
Yes, I used to watch it. I used to watch it, yeah.
So after the first season, I went to the Nationals up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which was the biggest contest ever held to date. And I would just encourage people, you want to see beard pictures, also go to Beard Team USA and World Beard Mustache Association.
Yeah.
Because we have Nationals every year in the United States. And then the world championships are every 2 years. And the freestyle is but one category. And that's where you see the wildest stuff. But, I mean, and every individual club can have their own subcategories. Like Alaska's had beard competitions for like 50 years. And they base their beards on color. So they have polar bear, Kodiak, black bear, whatever.
Okay, yeah.
But it's gotten to the point where beards are business beard up to 6 inches, 6 to 12, and over 12 inches. Because I've seen beards literally to the knees,
yeah,
waist to the knees, and then you know mustache. They have a whaler, which is a beard without a mustache.
Yeah,
but I would just say go to Beard Team USA, World Beard Mustache Association. My picture used to be for some reason there was about six pictures, and my picture was there with two guys from the Nationals.
Yeah.
But my beard, 14 inches, it's a pea shooter compared to these.
That's an impressive beard that you have, Doc, but these guys go way out. I mean, way out.
Yeah, and I've that's a lot of work. There's a guy from Germany in his 60s, and his sister does his. And one year, it was like the suspension bridge, like the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
And then the next year, he had it pulled out, and on one side had some trees, and the other side had some deer, you know, and that is a lot of work. And from the time you finish, gravity is taking its toll on it.
I bet.
It's hard to have it like that for very many hours.
Yeah,
but it is entertaining, and there's about 80 chapters of Beard Team USA out there.
All right. Well, we'll check it out. Thank you, Doc.
All right, man. Yep.
See ya. All right. Well, there you go. Check that out. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, filmmaker Jerry Vassalatos is going to be with us. His film Solstice is celebrating its 25th anniversary. We'll talk about that and more with Jerry right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later, 312-981-7200. After the 2 o'clock news, our good buddy Ian Schur is going to join us. Ian is a news editor-at-large at cnet.com. We talk to him usually about once a month to talk all things tech. Always a lot of tech talk in the news, and it's always a lot of fun to talk to Ian from cnet.com, which is a terrific website. So that's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And here we go. And but that music you heard is from a film called Solstice, which was put together by Jerry Vassilatos, who's been on the show several times. Jerry, welcome back.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to see you.
How you doing, buddy?
Fantastic.
Good. Good, good, good. So Solstice is 25 years old.
It's 25 years old, and it's been winning awards in film festivals this year for the remastered and restorative edition.
That's fantastic.
I never imagined that could happen, but it's happening, and I'm eternally grateful and proud of it.
That's really great. Well, listen, let's start with you.
Sure.
You're from Chicago.
Yeah.
You went to Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were always into, you've always wanted to make films, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And how did your interest start? When you were a kid, were you just a movie freak?
Well, when I was a kid, my dad used to bring home 16-millimeter films from the library that we projected in the basement on a white sheet. And that's where the bug bit me as far as loving movies and being very interested in figuring out and discovering how I could become a filmmaker, tell stories in that medium.
Yeah, yeah. I remember we didn't have 16-millimeter. We were just, you know, everybody had it. We had Super 8.
Yeah, well, we had. He played Super 8 movies too.
Yeah,
he used to work at the old Bell and Howell company. And
he
designed the projector casing, so he would bring home the projectors that he had a hand in designing, and we'd have Super 8, and then we'd have the 16 millimeter, and then that, of course, led eventually to VHS that replaced all that.
Right,
a larger market of films was available. To
right.
View.
Yeah. Well, now I remember. I have great memories of the old Super 8 stuff because I used to have. You know, we had a ton of. I bought a bunch of Three Stooges. Edited shorts, and they would only run about 4 minutes, if that, right? 4 or 5 minutes?
They would. That's actually the medium I learned on in high school.
Was 8mm?
Super 8, yeah.
Yeah, Super 8?
Neutra High School had a filmmaking class, and we were actually shooting on Super 8 film, cutting on these little editing
blocks. I was going to say, how do you cut that?
With a magnifying glass, because, you know, the frame is so small.
Yeah.
But actually being able to handle film, even with the, you know, smaller Super 8 cameras, kind of led to me learning how to write screenplays, direct, and then edit, and then take that into film school.
We used to have they would edit down horror movies too. I remember, was it Castle?
Castle Films.
Yeah, Castle Films.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of those Castle Films, and I remember one of my favorites was their shortened, you know, 4 minute edit of Frankenstein versus the Wolfman.
That's a great one.
And my dad used to he would play around with the projector because there's a part of the movie where the Wolfman jumps off of like a big, you know, they're fighting in the.
I remember the film. Yeah,
they're fighting in the Frankenstein laboratory.
Yeah.
In the castle.
Yeah,
and at one point he jumps off. There's like a, you know, the flood comes in, and he's on top of a giant piece of machinery, and he jumps off of it and tackles Frankenstein. And my dad used to play it reverse and forward and reverse and forward, and the Wolfman would jump off, jump back, jump off, jump back. And that, when I was a little kid, that just destroyed me.
Just made you laugh. I remember Black Hawk films also. That was the only way you could see Star Wars
before home
video.
Oh, that's right.
I wore that Super 8 reel out.
I bet, man. I bet. You know, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, we go from like the 16mm into the VHS and beta, of course.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll have him on tomorrow. My video guy Jeff Tuckman comes in. He's been a part of the show for I can't even tell you how many years. He's been a part of the show, and so we always reminisce about the old days. You know, before DVDs and Blu-ray and all this and 4K and all this stuff. The first video stores. You know, the little
mom and pop
video stores.
Yep.
And then I was always amazed by the fact that there was the only way to get, I think it was Paramount movies, was the only way to get them was to go to Photomat. You had there were very early days.
You mean the video label Paramount was only available at Photomat?
I can't remember the studio, but there was one studio that was available. I don't know if it was Paramount, but it was a major studio.
Yeah.
It was one studio that was only available if you went to your local Photomat.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, yeah. And I just remember one of the movies that was only available at the Photomat, and every one of the advertisings that we do, the big one was the Clonus Horror.
I don't even remember that film.
Yeah, this is a film from the 70s.
This was a horror film?
Yeah, it was cloning. You know, it was about cloning. The Clonus Horror. and I remember wanting to go to Photomat just to get the Clonus Horror. Because we were very early to our family, you know, because my parents went out and got a VCR at a very young age because I was such in, I was in the, I've been in the movie since I was born. And so they were like, look at this. Well, let's go get it. And I think they paid like $1,800 for it.
Oh, they were incredibly expensive. And before films became widely available on VHS, you know, you were dealing with, I remember there was a store in Wilmette where I grew up. It was a TV repair store. And, you know, in the back room, they had bootlegs. We got Raiders of the Lost Ark before it was released. Somehow or another, they were able to get these bootleg copies of these movies that
It's funny because I had a bootleg of Raiders of the Lost Ark too. It had just come out in theaters. It came out in the summer of 81. And in September of 81, I got a bootleg copy.
It was so scandalous to have bootlegs back then.
Oh, it's completely. There's a beef shop, and I think the Statue of Limitations is up. There's a beef shop on Cicero and Montrose called Roma's, and they have actually one of the best Italian beefs that you can get in this city. It's fantastic, and I've been eating there, you know, since I was in high school. It's Montrose and it's on Cicero near Montrose. Mm. And there was a shady guy that used to work there. He didn't run it or anything. He was just a dude that used to work there. And I had a buddy of mine that I went to high school with who also worked there and told me, hey, this guy, he can get you Escape from New York.
Oh my
he
God!
He can get you Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
And he did, and they were terrible copies.
Of course, but I mean if you couldn't afford to go to the movie theater over and
oh,
over.
Oh no,
over
I used
again,
to watch. I used to watch to... both of those. I had Escape from New York and I had Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I watched them over and over again.
And I bet you wore them out.
Absolutely. No, and you could.
You could. Yeah, yeah, you could.
So you've been a lover of movies your whole life.
Pretty much.
Tell me about how your career in the movie business began.
My career in the movie business began with this film that we're talking about for its 25th anniversary, Solstice. I came out of film school with a passion to make a film. In a strange twist of fate, came into the resources financially to be able to produce my first movie.
Right.
So I took that money and I wrote, produced, and directed this film that I really just wanted to use as a calling card for film festivals to prove that I could direct movies, because I didn't expect anyone was going to give me money to make a movie. So
yeah.
I put my money where my mouth was and produced it. By the time I went through about $130,000 of this personal injury settlement that I referenced a moment ago, my friends were kind of taking me by the hand and saying, Jerry, film festivals are great, but you need to try to make some of your money back. So maybe you should see if you can find a sales agent to find out how to distribute it.
Mm-hmm.
So I hooked up with an old instructor of mine at Columbia who taught exhibition and distribution, a gentleman named Dave Sikich, and showed him the film, and he and his partner John Iltis repped Hoop Dreams.
John Iltis.
Do you remember John?
I do.
Yeah, I've been in touch with them since I've been
great man.
Working on
his PR company.
Man.
I had when I was back in the 80s when I first started being a film critic, I saw John.
He was everywhere in Chicago.
Everywhere in Chicago, and also fantastic facial hair. We were talking about
he
facial
does.
Hair.
He still has it too.
Yeah,
I think.
John Iltis. A great guy. I love John.
Yeah.
I love that
well,
guy.
Well, both of them looked at the movie and enjoyed it, but were concerned because it was only 48 minutes. And I said, well, the story told itself in 48 minutes, so I guess that's going to be it. And they said, no, you have an opportunity, even though you can't get theatrical on this, we can't take it to festivals for theatrical, we know a producer's rep that does TV. So they put me in touch with another gentleman named Shel Bugan.
Mm-hmm.
He had a company called Video Media Distribution, and he pitched it at the time to Showtime, USA, and Lifetime Television. And at that time, Lifetime wanted to have an original Christmas movie affiliated with their network. But they had,
and now that's all they're affiliated.
That's all they do now. Well, this movie kicked off that tradition because they hadn't commissioned a production company to produce something. So here's my producer's rep with a 48-minute movie, fills an hour time slot. They stamped Lifetime original movie on it, and it kicked off that annual tradition of having an original holiday film associated with the network.
Yeah. It's amazing how that is such a big thing now. And they battle with Hallmark.
Yeah.
It's like Lifetime and Hallmark have their Christmas battles, and they start like in October.
Yep.
And they make original. I mean, now they make like 30 or 40.
Do.
It's 30 or 40 a year.
That's all they
make.
I actually approached Lifetime, you know, telling them, hey, I don't know if you remember, but this was the first movie, 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were looking more for, I guess, romantic film, more contemporary romantic films.
That's pretty much what every one of
those
things.
That's all they are. And that's fine. I mean, I completely accept and understand that.
Yeah.
So here I am, you know, promoting this 25th anniversary restoration for people who love Christmas movies that may not have seen it 25 years ago. It looks better, sounds better than it did when we originally produced it. And that has to do with restoring and remastering the film and adding a new orchestral score.
I want to talk about that. And I remember you went to where did you go to get
Budapest,
the,
Hungary.
Budapest. You went to Budapest to get to finish the score.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so we're going to take a quick break. I want to talk more about the restoration, how people can get it, and all that cool stuff. The movie is called Solstice. Jerry Vassalatos is the filmmaker, and we'll take a quick break and talk more about it right after this on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 o'clock. Coming up after the 2 o'clock news, Ian Schur is going to join us. He's a news editor-at-large for CNET.com. CNET.com is your tech website that you have to go to keep up on what's happening and reviews of everything. It's a great website. We always talk tech with him. That's coming up. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. Again, that music that you heard is from a film called Solstice. The director, producer and writer of that movie is here live in studio, Jerry Vassalatos. Jerry, welcome back.
And I want to give credit to my amazing composer, Balint Shepson, who composed that new score and is a big part of why I think the film has reached new audiences. I mean, he's helped breathe new life into this by, it was a 25-piece orchestra in Budapest scoring this. And,
that's amazing.
And putting the music to it that I wanted 25 years ago, but couldn't afford at the time. So we replaced the old synth score. And this is a new score. I mean, this isn't like redoing the old music.
Yeah.
This is a completely originally composed new score.
That's beautiful. Now, listen, we have you were kind enough to bring four copies of the movie that we can give away right now.
DVDs, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. We got some DVDs of Solstice, which at this time of year is perfect, perfect to win. So let's do this. First four callers, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Get a copy of Solstice on DVD. It's restored and remastered, and it's a wonderful Christmas movie. First of all, first four callers 1 through 4 will win copies of the DVD of Solstice. It's 312-981-7200. Tell everybody about the plot of the movie, just briefly, without giving anything away.
Sure. Well, it's a story about a young man on Christmas Eve who is a bit despondent, not quite happy with his lot in life, seeing things around him that kind of amplify his sense of solitude and loneliness, and this journey he has on a very cold Christmas Eve where he encounters a variety of characters, people he knows, people he doesn't know, that help him discover what the holidays are truly about.
Mm-hmm. Well, there it is.
And there's a romantic storyline in it. Mm-hmm. My two leads, Michael Kelly and Mary McLeod, are just phenomenal actors. I was in touch with them last year when I was out in Los Angeles filming interviews for the bonus content for the Blu-ray that's coming out in December.
Yeah.
And it was like picking up from where we left off and a wonderful trip down memory lane.
That's good. Can you believe it's been 25 years?
No. And while I was restoring the film, first of all, we rescanned the original 16mm negative from the camera to get a 2K scan to get the perfect picture quality. But then I had to go into reconstructing the audio because the original mixes from the 1990s were on digital formats of which you cannot find the equipment anymore to like read the data. So I actually went into the reel-to-reel audio tapes, field tapes, to reconstruct and resync everything. And as I was finding the right takes to align with picture, I was hearing, chatter between takes. It was like a time machine.
Yeah.
Going back in time, hearing us on set talking between takes.
Yeah, must be weird.
It was weird, but it was I guess, somewhat fulfilling that 25 years later, my feeling was that I could represent it to new audiences. And all the work we did back then, I had a crew of Columbia students helping on it. It was a miracle project then. And I feel like it's a miracle now that it's been winning awards and festivals this year for the score and best drama, helping to put it in front of people again to rediscover.
That's great. That's really great. It's nice that a movie 25 years later still has some life to it,
One of the things I've been really proud about is that people who've seen it now, reflecting on it, say, okay, it was set in the 90s, but it's not a 90s movie. Everybody has 90s haircuts, 90s clothes.
Right.
But the themes that the characters are dealing with are as relevant today as they were then, if not more so. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I'm proudest of. I didn't imagine back then I'd be making something that would still hold up 25 years later, but with the acting and the performances and the themes in the film, I think this is what resonates with people.
That's great. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank
man.
You.
And I'm really glad that you are able to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Solstice. And thank you for bringing the four copies in. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
What are you working on now? What's next?
Well, I'm presently in development on a film called Shelter Me. Mm-hmm. Which
we talked about the last time.
We did, yeah. And actually, I've got a little bit more traction on that. Shelter Me is a screenplay that's been winning awards in scriptwriting competitions all year, mm-hmm. which has helped us put it in front of people at CineSpace Studios and a group called Chicago Media Angels, and we're basically trying to put the pieces together on that. That's what I'm moving into next after I wrap up this last leg of the Solstice 25th anniversary. The film is going to be on Amazon Prime. It's dropping on Amazon Prime next Wednesday, November 27th.
Oh, Solstice
is going to be on Amazon Prime November 27th, and the Blu-rays will be available December 15th. That have got a couple of extra hours of bonus materials and interviews and behind-the-scenes content newly produced this year to really be the most comprehensive look at like how this little miracle movie came together. And I have a pre-sale campaign for it right now on Indiegogo, but that link is too long to share. If you go to solsticeblu-ray.com, mm-hmm. it will take you to the Indiegogo page where you can get the new Blu-ray, and we'll be delivering those the week of December 15th so people have it to watch for Christmas time.
That's perfect. Solsticeblu-ray.com.
Solsticeblu-ray.com, and the movie site, of which the Blu-ray link is at also, is solsticemovie.com. People
solsticemovie.com.
Can visit the site and read everything they might be interested in what went into this film.
Well, it's such a great story, Jerry. To 25 years later be here back on the show talking about it, I'm sure you must be incredibly proud of this movie.
I'm glad that I can. I never imagined that I would be revisiting this film, and the reason I ended up revisiting it was because the old standard definition version just didn't look right for HDTV, and that's what inspired going into the negative and restoring it so that people could finally see it again, because I didn't want to show them the old standard definition version because it looked bad.
Yeah.
And now that it's been cleaned up digitally, I mean, I literally frame by frame was removing dirt, scratches, dust, before having it recolor graded and the sound remixed and remastered and rescored. So it really honestly looks better now than it did back then. And if people love Christmas movies and are looking for something new, but traditional, I think they'll enjoy this.
Okay. So Solstice, you can go to solsticeblu-ray.com, solsticemovie.com. Jerry, always a pleasure. Congratulations on everything.
I really appreciate it.
All right. And we have our four winners already. And
fantastic.
So,
so enjoy the film.
It didn't take very long. All right, Jerry, thanks again. And
thanks,
have a
Nick.
Great Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Okay. We'll be back after this.
Radio's on and I'm moving around the place. I check my look in the mirror. Wanna change my clothes, my hair, my face. But I ain't getting nowhere. I'm just living in a dumb life.
The other morning I discovered Hot Chip. That's who they are, right? Tom? Hot Chip? Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here on a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. All right. We played a little techno song there because we're talking tech, as we often do, with our good friend Ian Schur. He is the news editor at large with CNET.com, which is a great website. And we always have him on. Usually about once a month to talk about all the latest in tech news. So let's bring Ian onto the show. Ian, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Tell everybody, you know, just an update what you do and tell us about CNET and all that cool stuff, just so people who maybe are first-time listeners.
Yeah, so CNET is the world's largest tech news and review site, and we basically review anything that has a power plug in it and an internet connection. And so you will find us talking about video game consoles. We obviously follow Black Friday really closely. I think we have one of the best TV testing groups in the world, and they gave me a really good recommendation for a TV, so I'm really excited about buying one this year after 10 years of using the same one. And, you know, we just really try to make sure to understand how tech is affecting our lives, from political issues and election interference all the way down to if a company decides to sell a new gadget, whether or not it's worth it, and whether or not they're doing right by you.
Yeah. Well, it's a great website, and it's CNET.com. And by the way, what kind of TV are you getting? Who guided you to the TV that you're getting?
So David Katzmeier is our TV wizard, and we have some videos on CNET you should check out about how he does the testing. It's rather insane. But he has been really a fan of TCL, which is a Chinese company. They sell these TVs that have Roku software in them. If you have read a lot of my stuff, you know that most of my household has been Apple since 2004.
Right.
But he's a real fan of these TCL TVs. He thinks they're the best value for the money. And so a colleague of mine bought one last year. He loves it. So I have finally decided to jump on the train.
Oh, that's cool. So when are you getting it?
Well, one of the really fascinating things about Black Friday this year is that I can actually buy it right now. What's been really interesting is that a lot of the Black Friday sales, you know, it used to be that we would all wait and like bated breath, if you're early into Black Friday, for when the announcements would come out, or better, when they would leak, right? And these websites would scoop them up and they'd have this big fanfare about the blurry image of the of the catalog and to find out what's on sale. Well, now all the companies are just releasing their sales early. And in fact, a lot of TVs are on their Black Friday sale right now. And you're promised that the price won't change after Thanksgiving. This is the sale. So I've been eyeing actually one of them that's about $100 less. And what I've decided is that I'm going to buy it. And then if it goes even cheaper on Black Friday, since I've delayed shipping, I'm going to then say, hey, give me the price cutter. I'm going to buy it from the other guy. So that's how I'm playing my game. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, since you mentioned Black Friday, you guys have put together some Black Friday deals. You've been covering this, and you got a whole bunch of them, new Black Friday 2019 deals. Give us some info on those.
You know, I think it's really important to remember that there's a lot of debate about where the value in Black Friday deals is. And for a lot of people, for example, one of the things we've learned is that Black Friday sometimes is a time when retailers try to kind of hike the prices up and then drop them so they can say, we dropped our price 30%, but in fact they didn't. And so one of the great things we've seen is that there are these tools on the internet. One of my favorites is called Camel. That's the word camel3times.com. And that you plug any Amazon link into there, it will tell you the price history of that thing. So you can find out whether your Black Friday deal is actually a deal. And because of these systems that have started to pop up, we can tell that there are some really good deals out there. So, for example, at CNET, as you mentioned, we have this list of the best Black Friday deals. And a good example of them is, in fact, a lot of the Amazon devices. If you are into Amazon's devices, whether it's their stuff for your kitchen to be able to help you do recipes, or if it's a device that you can talk to in your home, I won't say its name so I don't set them all off, you can actually buy them at good prices now. And you're talking about saving, in some cases, $100 on these devices. And we have been reviewing every one of them. So that's a really good one. Apple's AirPods, for some reason, are going on sale a lot these days. So you can pick those up for pretty cheap. We're talking 15, 20 bucks off, which, you know, when it's a $150 device or a $250 device, you're getting a pretty good deal there. And then the final thing is also all these smart home devices. You know, you've got the world of Ring and Nest, and all these other people, they are all dropping their prices like stones because they really want to get your attention.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at this list. Boy, there are a lot of good deals here. And you can save a lot of money. And it's a pretty comprehensive list. And it covers all kinds of gadgets and all kinds of devices and all kinds of things. So, yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're looking for even better stuff, you know, it's not just that list. We actually have lists from every one of the lists. If you go to the bottom of it, we have stuff separated out by the best computer deals, the best gaming deals. I mean, it's just crazy how much effort we put into this. And we're not alone. A lot of people do it, but I like to think we do a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, and it's got everything from video doorbells where you can save money. You can get an Apple Watch series. You can get an Apple Watch for a great price. And also you tell people where to buy them. Like, what are the best places what are the best places to get them?
Exactly. So, yeah, we're really trying, you know, there's this whole, along with the kind of effort to make this stuff a lot more transparent, what's happened is this cottage industry of people who are really good at finding this stuff has popped up. And we have, for example, there's a daily email we send out called The Cheapskate, which is run by one of our people. And it's literally like the best deal on the internet today. And one of the great things about it is that, again, because of all this transparency, we're able to tell you, oh, here's the review. Here's whether or not we think, you know, our advice is whether it's worth buying or not. And here's where you're going to get the best deal on it. And that's just really cool, I think.
Yeah. And it covers, I'm also looking at this, and it covers, you guys also tell people how they can get the Living DNA 3-in-1 Ancestry Kit. And it's only $69. You can save $30 on that. You even include an Ancestry Kit.
Yes, exactly. No, we're all over the place. Because it's not just about tech, right? It's about tech culture. And Ancestry stuff especially, I mean, you look on any ad on television these days or in magazines, everyone's wanting to learn about their family history. I guess nostalgia is really in season.
Yeah.
So that's why part of our interests are there, too. You know, we're not just looking, hey, let's get you the best video game. Hey, let's get you the best TV. But also the culture around it, right? That whether or not Apple TV Plus is worth it, or Disney Plus, or all that stuff. We're trying to think out as many ways as we can about how it's not just the technology, but how it impacts your life.
Yeah. Well, you guys do a great job. And also, I've noticed this in commercials and advertisements this season. The term now, Black November. So are we talking about an entire month of shopping? Is that what we're talking about now?
I mean, this is really like, you know, it's been, you think back to when they used to make jokes about how Christmas was no longer in December, right? It was a whole season. And, you know, I think, look, part of the reason that this is happening this year is that the retailers have kind of thrown their hands up and said, okay, keeping this stuff secret isn't worth it. We realize that if we run the deals longer, people are just going to buy them, so that's better. But also, there's a quirk of the calendar this year that Christmas and Black Friday are closer together than they've been in a long time.
Thanksgiving's really late this year.
Exactly. Yeah. So as a result, the retailers, who of course have to answer to Wall Street at one point or another, want to get as many sales as they can under the deadline as they can possibly. So part of this is them trying to be smart about getting us all to buy stuff.
Sure.
But we end up winning a little bit in the end, so why not?
Yeah. And you guys are covering, obviously, you're also covering Cyber Monday, which has become a big thing as well over the past few years.
Yep. Cyber Monday and Giving Tuesday, right? We have a list of companies and places to look at that stuff as well. I mean, and I'm sure they're going to come up with something for Wednesday not too long from now. So, yeah, we're definitely trying to do.
Yeah, there's no question about
maybe
it.
Maybe my credit card wailing Wednesday, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
You guys also, in the article that I'm looking at, why is it called Black Friday is a question, and you guys answer that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of funny. The history of Black Friday, I think one of my best kind of stories about it is that, you know, the idea that, you know, this had been back in the 50s and really that all of the retailers would not be able to make enough money until the time they would be losing money up until the holiday season. And then sales would go so high that they would get into the black. And that's why I call it Black Friday.
There it goes.
So, you know, it's really funny how, again, like the shopping culture that exists around us, right? And, you know, it's funny to think of capitalism in this way, but really how much retailing has changed the way we think in the last 50 years.
Yeah, okay. Well, really fun stuff and a great guide. Everybody go to CNET.com. Everything that we're going to be talking about, all of these articles are available at CNET.com. Ian, hang on, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, Ian Schur is with us from CNET.com. He's a news editor at large. More with Ian about tech after this on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday night. Lots of fun stuff on the show this morning. Triple Play Thursday. Again, get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page with facebook.com/Nick D Show. We are having our monthly visit with Ian Schur, who's a news editor at large for CNET.com. And we're talking all kinds of tech news and info. So let's bring Ian back. Ian, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So I think a lot of people are excited about this Motorola Razr And I think some of it has to do with nostalgic because people really loved the old Razor phone. But it's got like, it's this one's the foldable phone, and you guys actually answer six burning questions about the Motorola Razor. So let's talk about this. This people are very excited about this.
Yeah, so first off, this device is really fascinating. So Motorola, you may remember the iconic Razor came out in 2004 or 2005. It changed the way that we thought about phones, right? I mean, it was so sleek and so modern memory. And I remember the ads, right, that they would show it on its profile. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, that is so thin. I've never seen a phone this thin.
Yeah.
And then everyone had one. So now Motorola, of course, they were sold to Google. That did not go very well. So then they were sold off to Lenovo. So they're owned by this Chinese company now that's one of the biggest computer makers in the world. And they're coming out with this new version of the Razr. And what's really fascinating about it, as you mentioned, is that it has a folding screen inside. So instead of having the buttons like it did back then,
yeah,
it now has one big screen. And, the folding phone craze has been really fascinating. Like there was the Galaxy Fold from Samsung, Huawei has the Mate X. Both of these are tablets that fold into phones. What Motorola decided to do was take a phone and fold it into a smaller phone, which, hey, I'm all for.
Yeah.
What's really interesting about this is we got, at CNET, we got the exclusive look at it. So we have a ton of videos and a lot of talk about behind the scenes, how they built it. And one of the things that we wanted to point out to people is even though we got this time to look at it, we don't know everything. And one of the most burning questions we have, well, there are two really. One is whether or not the battery life lives up to what they say, because it is really hard when you've got a whole screen to light that screen for as long as people do. And the Razr is thin. So that's a new problem because batteries just haven't been getting better. And a thinner phone means a smaller battery means less battery life. So I'm really curious to see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But the other question that we're really fascinated by is the screen itself. Samsung had to basically pull the phone, the Samsung Galaxy Fold, from being sold the week it was coming out,
right?
Because reviewers noticed that there were problems with it. Like literally sand getting from your pocket into the phone would destroy it, which is not normal.
Yeah.
So we don't know how this screen is going to do. Most of these screens are covered in plastic, not glass, because glass doesn't bend, but plastic does. Mm-hmm. So we don't know whether or not this thing's going to be durable, and we haven't had enough time to torture test it to find out.
Okay. Well, that would be the first question that I would have because of the, the past problems with foldable phones and foldable screens and stuff like that. That would be my first question would be, how durable is it?
Yeah, and I think what's going to be interesting is I have a feeling because these are all plastic displays that at some point they're going to have to come up with a solution for this. I remember when Palm first came out with their devices, the personal digital assistants everyone had. Not everyone, the nerds like me had. The one thing about it is that it had a plastic screen. So if you had that little stylus and you used it the wrong way, you would scratch the screen up. And it was really, really sad. The glass solved that for a lot of us. We don't scratch our glasses easily, but now we're going back to plastic for all these foldable phones. They really need to solve this because people are not used to scratching their displays.
And they're also concerned, I guess, some of the other questions, concerns like how splash-proof the screen is and, just keeping it around in daily life and how, if it was splash-proof or not.
Yeah, and also whether or not it can survive being folded a ton of times. We did a torture test of the Samsung Galaxy Fold because they said it would last up to 200,000 folds. That's what they tested on. So we got a device that we actually had made that would fold it, and we did it for 12 hours, and we got it up to 100,000+, and it broke.
Uh-huh.
So we found that it didn't live up to expectations. So, of course, now every folding phone that we find, we're going to have to figure out, does it fold correctly and for how long?
Yeah, wow. All right. And then the other people are concerned, or not concerned, but they're curious as to whether or not it's going to come in any other colors than black.
Well, yeah, right. And the original Razr came in gray and black, I think. By the end of its life, right, it was coming in pink and all of these neon colors. So I'm sure if this thing takes off, they'll do that. I mean, why wouldn't you? But in the meantime, yeah, I have a feeling the launch time, people are going to probably be looking at and monotone colors, right? Because they want to just prove to us that it works.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right. Well, there you go. That's the when is it coming out?
So they say sometime next year, which means that they are missing the holiday rush. no Black Friday on that one.
Right.
But the other thing is that they're saying it's going to be $1,500, which
what?
Is a tall order for this thing. Yeah, that's not cheap. To be fair, the original Razor was also expensive. So, you know, people had sticker shock around that, too. So welcome back to 2005. But also, the other thing is that all of these folding phone screens right now have expensive. Like the Samsung Galaxy Fold is $2,000. The Huawei Mate X, I don't think they even have a pay price on it, which means it may be worse than that. And so it's not surprising to hear that this is expensive. It's going to be a while before folding phones become a standard thing that we all have, if they do.
Wow. So, you know, Tom and I Tom has the Disney Plus. Are people at CNET talking about Disney Plus? Have it?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So there are a lot of people who have it. I'm one of the few who doesn't. But a lot of us, and by the way, the reason I don't is that I went around and bought a lot of the DVDs for the movies I cared about a long time ago. So I don't need it, right? I've got most everything I want. Except for if I want to watch The Mandalorian, which I may wait until it comes out on DVD.
Right.
But a lot of my colleagues were signed up immediately. By the way, we have an instructions on CNET if you want to be able to get some extra free time if you do want to sign up.
Okay.
But one of the things about it is that it is getting a ton of attention. So we have a really good frequently asked questions list. It is long, but it explains everything you've ever wanted to know about this thing. Why are people talking about it? What shows are on it? Whether or not it's worth it, we've reviewed a lot of the shows already, so we're able to tell you whether those are worth it. So, yeah, we try to be pretty comprehensive because, again, you know, it's not just tech, it's how it impacts our lives.
Sure.
This is the golden age of television. We've got to keep an eye on how this stuff is going, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Tom, you're enjoying Disney Plus, correct?
Yeah, my girlfriend's enjoying it even more.
Yeah.
Because she can watch The Princess Diaries 1 and 2 on repeat.
there you go, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, later on, they're going to release a new version of Disney Plus that includes ESPN and Hulu in a bundle, and you'll be able to have the sports stuff and possibly finally be able to get rid of your cable bill if you want to do that. So that's really fascinating, too.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. And then, of course, you know, obviously you heard about how it kind of broke the internet when everybody tried to get on at the same time. And, of course, it was just a small glitch. It wasn't a big deal, Tom, right? But it was, of course, it became a huge deal on the internet.
Yeah, nothing that I could tell was too insane. Some people were getting unnecessarily upset, but it was working within a few hours of me signing up that morning.
So, there you go. Another story.
And by the way,
yeah,
all of these products fail in the beginning. Like, I've never seen a big launch go well, like, ever. I mean, even when the original iPods were coming out, right, and everyone would get them in Christmas, I remember it. Like, iTunes would fail every year. Like, they just couldn't keep up. So, you know, it's not a surprise Disney struggled. But still, it's a little bit of a black eye. But, you know, now they're pretty much handled.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just such a, I mean, you know, everything becomes a, you know, everything becomes a big deal on the internet. People are like, oh, it's the worst. I can't believe this, you know. And then it was just, it was a small glitch that was fixed in a few hours, and now everybody seems to be happy about it. But I love that everything becomes a big deal on the internet. That's always the case.
I will point out one thing, though. There is one thing going around about people talking about their Disney Plus accounts being hacked.
Mm.
The reason it appears that that's going on, Disney insists they haven't been hacked, is that likely what researchers think is going on is that, you know, we all have a lot of our information out there on the internet because Adobe and all these other people have been hacked in the past. And if you had an account with them, your stuff is on the internet. Yahoo, everybody.
Yeah.
So what they think is going on is that a lot of people want to watch Disney Plus, right? Especially for the Mandalorian, Star Wars stuff. So what they're doing is that they're taking your stuff, your old passwords that they can find in these databases, and they're trying them on Disney Plus because everyone uses the same password everywhere. And that is why people are getting into people's accounts.
Uh-huh.
So the one thing I plead with all of you listening, get yourselves a password manager. They're really good to use these days. We have a great list on CNET. And change your friggin' password. Stop using the same one everywhere you go. That is the number one reason everyone gets hacked.
Yeah.
It's not because security is bad. It's because we all suck at our passwords.
Right.
So get on it.
Get on it and keep your Disney Plus safe. All right, Ian, hang on, okay?
Yep.
All right. Ian Scherer is with us, and he is a news editor at large at CNET.com, a great website. And you can follow him on Twitter at Ian Scherer, S-H-E-R-R. More with Ian about tech after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday. Thursday morning. Get your request for Triple Play Thursday in at 312-981-7200. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And Ian Schur is a news editor-at-large for CNET.com. He joins us about once a month to talk tech. And let's get Ian back in here. Hi, Ian.
I got to say, every month I say this, I think, I love listening to the opening songs that you and Tom pick every time. It is so fun.
Yeah,
you guys have a great taste for that.
That's Tom. That's all Tom. Tom handles all the picking all the music bumps and stuff like that. So, yeah, there you go.
Hooray for Tom. All right. I enjoy it.
All right. Well, listen, it's hard to believe that we're coming to the end of a decade. I mean, it's just crazy. But we are. And you guys are covering the decade, and you guys are doing Decade in Review, and you have some of the tech scandals of the decade. Tell us a little bit about those things that happened in the past 10 years.
Yeah, so I got assigned we've been doing all of these things, Decade in Review, right? All of the worst stuff that kind of went wrong, or the privacy concerns, or even how computers changed, how phones changed. I got all the scandals, right? Which is like, oh, my God, I ended up writing, I'm not kidding you, like 30 pages worth. And that was after I whittled them down.
Mm.
So what we've been doing over the last week is releasing all of them in little kind of posts so that people can digest them in a decent amount of time. And it's really fascinating. Like, one of the trends I found, and if you read the pieces I wrote, one of the things you'll find is that in the beginning of 2010s, it was all about products, right? Like Apple Maps failing, or the antenna gate on the Apple iPhone 4. Remember, you couldn't hold it right?
Right.
And then it would suddenly, all of that stuff. There was talk about how there were a couple of apps out there that came out that people didn't like People, P-E-E-P-L-E, which, if you don't remember that, it was a way to actually give a judgment of a person. Like, it was like literally Yelp for people, which is like mind-bogglingly awful. But there was a lot of that stuff that happened, and that was the beginning of the decade. And as we went along, suddenly the tech industry went from like these little scandals about technology to these massive scandals about how they're impacting our daily lives, right? And suddenly it's like election interference and the downfall of democracy and these major privacy fails that expose billions of people's information. It's a head slap. It's amazing how much has changed, and over the last 4 years in particular, how bad it's gotten. And I really found that fascinating as I went through this.
Yeah, well, some of the ones that you've got here are I had sort of completely forgotten about, but I love that you included the whole Edward Snowden thing.
Yes, very important, right? I mean, still he's an issue, right? But yeah. Edward Snowden, of course, exposed all of those NSA secrets about how they're spying on all of us. They basically proved everyone with a tinfoil hat to be correct. And now we're in this situation where, you know, we still are dealing with the fallout of what he's taught us, right? Even though most of what he's done is, you know, has reverberated and we've had all these conversations, the trust in the government, I think, has completely changed. And the assumption of our privacy in technology has gone so sour that Apple is able to market its devices as being private. And it's just incredible to watch this all happening in a lot of ways, thanks to him.
Yeah, it's a crazy stuff. I mean, well, they made a movie out of it, too.
They made several. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. All right, how about BlackBerry's fall? You remember when everybody had a BlackBerry?
Oh, my gosh. I remember, you know, I remember when BlackBerry really had their moment, which was unfortunately coincided with 9/11. You know, there was a lot of talk about how during 9/11, all the phone lines were down. It was really hard for people to communicate. But the leadership on Capitol Hill all had been issued BlackBerries, and they were some of the only people who were able to communicate in the middle of all of that that was going on. And that was the moment everyone said, oh, my God, I got to get one, right? And so BlackBerry just became this huge company, and they really owned the market for years. They were competing with Microsoft and Palm to really be the leader. And until the iPhone came out, they were the people to beat. And then the iPhone just trounced them within a couple of years. And I think one of my favorite stories that came out of that is that I think it was Wired did this incredible behind-the-scenes story of BlackBerry when the iPhone was announced. And the best part about it is that apparently all of the CEOs and the heads of the company were sitting in a room watching Steve Jobs give the presentation of the first iPhone, and they were laughing at it. And they said, this can't possibly be true. Mm. It's got to be fake. This thing is going to fail. And, of course, it took over and completely destroyed their company. Yeah,
absolutely. How about the rise and fall of Google Plus?
Right? Another really fascinating story. You know, Google Plus, I think, was one of those things that everyone was looking at social networking, again, as this positive thing before the world kind of turned sour. And so we were all thinking, okay, well, is it all going to be Facebook or is there going to be someone else? And Google coming in, they already had Gmail accounts for all of us and everything. We thought, okay, this is going to be huge. And I admit, I signed up on day one because I thought it would be. And it's really fascinating how they completely screwed it up. And this thing, within a year, was declared a virtual ghost town, and it never recovered. Mm. And what's perhaps even funnier than that is that 7 years it took them to shut it down. And they only shut it down after they found someone had hacked 500,000 people at it, of course, and that they decided to shut it down in August of this year.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, there's more going on here, and you guys are continuing to do the decade in review as we get closer to the end of the year. So all that stuff is up on at CNET.com.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. There's a story that I want to get to before we run out of time. There's now a trash talking robot that's going to tell you how much you suck at gaming.
Yeah, why not, right? I mean, I've got enough 12-year-olds I can meet, but apparently we need a robot, too.
Yeah.
You know, I think what's really fascinating is that the reason this exists is that researchers at Carnegie Mellon University in Pennsylvania wanted to learn how humans and robots interact. And one of the fascinating things about it is that up until now, according to the researchers, all of the interactions have been positive. They've only tested whether or not we like robots when they're nice to us. And they were curious, well, what does it feel like when a robot's mean to you?
Yeah.
Right? And apparently when they're mean to you, we really get flustered. They found that people's game scores suffered pretty bad when the robot was unkind. And would say stuff like, I have to say you are a terrible player, or stuff like that. And suddenly people would like get bad, worse at the game. So it's a good lesson to you, because eventually our robot overlords will take over. Get ready for them to be mean at you, because apparently that's the way they're going to do it.
Wow. Okay. I like that they're doing that kind of research at Carnegie Mellon. That's really very good. Before we get out, speaking of gaming, tell us a little bit about, before we get out of here, Google Stadia.
Yeah, so this is supposed to be like the future of gaming. So you know how we all watch videos on Netflix and Hulu now? We don't really have the file on our computers. They get streamed to us over the internet.
Right.
And believe it or not, that's like a 12-year-old idea. Like it was a really revolutionary idea in 2007 when Netflix came out of it. Well, now they're talking about that coming out for video games. The problem is it's a lot harder to make a video game that's interactive that works over the internet than it is a movie. So what's happened is that Google jumped in. They have this new thing called Stadia. It launched this week. And one of the things about it is that they were going to be, I mean, this is, again, right, just like Google Plus, huge company, unlimited resources. They're going to take over the world. Well, our review at CNET, and a lot of people agreed with us, it's not ready for prime time. So if you are excited about the future of gaming, you might still want to hold off a little bit. You know, it's an interesting idea. The pricing's a little wacky, but it does – it does talk about the future. And by the way, Microsoft is building a competing service that's likely to come next year. Sony already has a competing service you can use today for $9.99 a month. Mm. There's a bunch of other ones coming out. So this is going to eventually be a part of the future. But if it's anything like what Stadia is doing, there's a lot of work to do. A
lot of work. Okay. And again, you guys, you have all of these articles that are available at CNET.com to help you out and to navigate through the tech world. Ian, always a pleasure to have you on, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Yes, you too. Thanks for having me.
All right, Ian, take care. Ian Schur, everybody, joins us once a month. The news editor at large for CNET.com. Always have a lot of fun talking tech with Ian. He's great. And yeah, always check out CNET.com. They're on top of it. They are. All right, let's take a break here. 312-981-7200. We'll get back to it right after this on WGN. For a while, this was my dad's ringtone. He loves this song. Every time I hear it now, I know Weezer did a cover of it on that album where they did a whole bunch of covers. And by the way, the appearance that they made on Jimmy Kimmel with Tears for Fears when they did Everybody Wants to Rule the World was fantastic, because they had Roland and Kurt on stage with them, with Weezer. It was great. I love Tears for Fears, one of my favorite bands ever. But now, when I hear this song, I think of Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard every single time.
Did they do a cover of it or something?
Whoa, you've not seen the video? Have you not seen the video of Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell doing Africa by Toto?
No.
Oh, no. Man. Oh.
Well, because I like Kristen Bell, but I don't really like Dax Shepard.
I like them both. I love Kristen Bell. I like Dax Shepard. I like him. I'm jealous of him because he's, married to Kristen Bell. I've liked him since Punk'd.
What about Without a Paddle? Were you a fan of that one?
No, and I hated Chips. He's hilarious in Idiocracy.
I'll give him that.
I think he's funny. I like the guy. I've always liked. I liked him ever. I'm not kidding. I've liked him since Punk'd. So, but yeah, no, that it was like a viral thing. I can't believe you've never seen it.
Oh God, it's from like 3 years ago too.
It was everywhere. It was everywhere, and it's fantastic. Hey, listen, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. Hey, can we do a little thing tomorrow on the show? Can we start planning it now? We should have done it this morning, but I didn't realize what the date meant this morning, but we have to do it tomorrow. Today is Harold Ramis' birthday.
That it is, yeah.
He would have been 75. So let's do a Harold Ramis thing tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll talk Harold Ramis. We'll have...
And we'll, Esmeralda will be in here. She's seen a ton of Harold Ramis movies, and... But I would be remiss if we didn't talk about the guy.
Got it.
It would have been his 75th anniversary, and he's one of my heroes.
Birthday.
He's true. His 75th birthday. Truly one of my heroes. Died in 2014, and it was devastating for anybody. He's one of the greatest comic minds and comic influences of his generation. And like I've said before, the holy trilogy of comedy. Of my generation, of growing up when I did, like seeing these movies as teenagers, the holy trilogy of comedy is Animal House, Caddyshack, and Stripes. And what's the one common denominator in all three of those movies? Harold Ramis. Ramis co-wrote Animal House, co-wrote, directed Caddyshack, co-wrote, starred in Stripes. That's it. And if he did nothing else after that. But he did. He did stuff like Stuart Saves His Family. He did stuff like these are both completely underrated. Ice Harvest, as I mentioned before, a Christmas movie that I watch every year. He was a big time hero of mine from SCTV days all the way through. And so, but he would have been 75 today. So I want to do a little Harold Ramis. We'll do a little talk a little Harold Ramis tomorrow. Maybe play a couple of audio clips from his movies and things like that. So I do want to make a quick announcement this morning. We'll talk about it again tomorrow really quickly. I am off all of next week. So tomorrow we've got Esmeralda Leon's going to be here. Jeff Tuckman is going to be here. We'll have all the regular Friday features. We'll do a little tribute to Harold Ramis. That's tomorrow's show. And then I'm off for Thanksgiving week. When I come back, it will be December 2nd, on Monday morning, December 2nd. But there's going to be a little change in the show. There's some stuff that's happened at the station where they shifted some things around and changed some shows and moved some things around. And so they've changed my hours, and I'm on longer now. I'm very happy that they've given me an extra hour. I'm on now. I started 11 p.m. the night before. So it'll technically be Sunday, December 1st when I come back. I will no longer start at 1 a.m. I will start at 11 p.m. and I will go till 4 a.m. So instead of a 4-hour show, we'll be doing a 5-hour show, but I will not be on from 4 to 5. So 2 hours earlier, I start 2 hours earlier, and I leave 1 hour earlier. So the show, the official time slot of the show from now on, I'm here all night, will be from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. every weeknight. So Sunday night at 11 o'clock to 4 a.m. I'm sorry. To 4 a.m. That's right. And at 4 o'clock, they're gonna do a simulcast of the WGN-TV early morning news from Channel 9. They're going to simulcast that for the first hour. And then at 5 o'clock, Steve Cochran starts at 5. So he starts an hour earlier. We do the simulcast at 4 o'clock, and I'm on from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. So it's a pretty big change, and we're excited to get in earlier, and there'll be, you know, like less traffic if I have to take a cab home at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm excited about it, and it's going to be weird to be here this early, you know, because normally I get here at about 11:15, but we'll be going on the air, which means I'll have to get here earlier than that, which is awesome. But it also, you know, it means that. You know, if you're on a little bit earlier, it's easier to book guests, because sometimes it's hard to book guests if you don't come on until 1 o'clock in the morning. Some guests are like, I don't want to be up that late, but we're on 2 hours earlier now. So I think booking some guests, especially West Coast guests, will be much easier. I'm very excited about it. And, I thank management for the opportunity to throw an extra hour onto my show. And I'm really thrilled that they've have enough confidence in me to be on all night, all morning. So, yeah, I know you're excited about it, Tom.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be the Nick D show, bigger, longer, and uncut.
Not sure the bosses are going to go for that as a title.
All right. But cross it off the branding.
But, no. I'm real excited about it. And it's been, you know, they've talked. Robert Feeder has already talked about some of the schedule changes. He's published it. I guess it'll probably be in newspapers and stuff all over the place. Some of the changes to the schedule that are being made here at WG. And as you probably know, we're under new management. We're now a Nexstar media radio station. And so whenever new management comes in, changes happen. You know, I've been with this station. You know what? Next year, it'll be 35 years. I've been with this radio station for 35 years. In May, I will be in this radio station for 35 years. I've seen a lot of bosses come and go. I've seen a lot of management come and go. And I'm excited about where we're headed here now with Nexstar. I am. And I think some of the changes are interesting. And I am really thrilled that they like my show enough to give me an extra hour and to start me early. So Justin Kaufman will be right before me every weekday morning, and I will follow him. He'll be on from 7 to 11, Justin Kaufman, and then I am on from 11 to 4 a.m., and then the WGN-TV early morning news simulcast will happen, and then you've got your morning drive with Steve Cochran. That all happens Monday, December 2nd. All the changes in the schedule with the new hours and the new shows and the changes, they all happen on Monday, December 2nd. So, but we're excited because we kick it off. We start the whole new schedule, and we'll be on Sunday night, December 1st, starting at 11 p.m. and going through 4 a.m. So starting in the beginning of December, when I get back from vacation, from Thanksgiving vacation, we start earlier. So tomorrow is our last 1 to 5 show. It's not, because the fill-in, you know, Brian will be on.
Yeah, Brian and Jim.
Toronto will be on from 1 to 5, but it'll be my last until I come back. Mm-hmm. It'll be the last show that I host from 1 to 5, and then we go 11 to 4. 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. And so I'm happy about it. I think it's great. I get an extra hour with you guys. And some people I know can't stay up as late, and maybe, you know, at 11 o'clock you'll be able to hear at least maybe an hour and a half of the beginning of the show. And we're planning on doing really more cool stuff and planning some other really cool things. And I love my job. I absolutely love it, and I love being on in the overnights and late night. So anyway, you get more of me. I don't know if that's a good thing for people listening, but you get an hour more of me. So, and I start earlier. So anyway, starting Sunday night, December 1st, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m., and that's the new shift from now on, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. So just wanted to let you know, little announcement. All right, let's take a break here.
Meet you all the way.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. By the way, who requested the Toto?
That's coming to us from Ruth.
Ruth, all right. Now, you know that song's about Rosanna Arquette.
Yes, it is.
And so is In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel.
People very into Rosanna Arquette, I guess.
Yeah, she must be something. You know, have especially In Your Eyes. God, to have that song written about you?
Lucky.
I understand. Rosanna Arquette's beautiful. She's awesome. I think she's fantastic. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 o'clock. Steve Krasanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6. And there you go. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. So yesterday, the Grammy nominations were announced, and I got the major categories here. Now, here's the thing about the Grammys. We can't discuss all the categories because we would be here until Thursday. Well, tomorrow's Thursday, or today is Thursday.
Today. Today next Thursday. Thursday.
We would be here until next month. They have 9,000 categories, roughly 9,000 categories in the Grammys. And many of them, obviously, many of them, most of them, are not handed out on the night of the telecast. And in fact, they only hand out the major categories on the night of the telecast because the Grammys over the past 10 years or so have not really been about the awards. They've been about musical performances, and that's what it mostly is. It's just mostly performances, which I think is pretty cool. You know, I enjoy watching the Grammys, and I like when they take, you know, a couple of different artists, one from each genre, a different genre, and put them together to perform on Grammy night, or like different generations, like an older performer who's more seasoned with a younger performer, maybe one of the best new artist nominees, and have them perform. Inevitably, when I watch the Grammys, there are times when I feel really old, where I watch it and go, I don't know what the hell's happening right now, and I don't know who this is. That happens more with the VMAs than anything else.
Got to get hip, Nick.
The VMAs. I watch the VMAs, and I'm like, I have no idea what the hell is happening right now. None. But I think the Grammys over the past few years, the changes that they made, the fact that it focuses more on, you know, performance, I like that. I really like that. And then, you know, they hand out a handful of awards, so you get to see, you know, the award thing. Person gets up on stage, they do their speech. But it's mostly about interesting combinations of artists, different genres of artists performing. And the show is like 3.5 hours long, and 90% of it consists of music instead of award after award after award. And they only hand out the awards that people, you know, care about on air. The rest of them aren't telecast. So, you know, I mean, you always go to the website. You can go to the Grammys website to see who won in some of the minor categories. But there are so many categories. I remember we covered the Grammys a few years ago, and Dan, my old producer, Dan Shagru, printed out the nominees. And it was like a ream of paper. Like, he brought it in. It was like a ream of paper. And I was like, what? And, I mean, the categories, you can't believe how minute and weird and detailed these categories get. So we're just going to cover the major ones. And I may need some help because there are probably artists here that I don't know who they are, Tom. You're a much younger man than I am and less grumpy. So, so the record of the year. This is the one that goes to the producer and the people behind the scenes, other than the artist. That's the record of the year. So it's "Hey Ma" by Bon Iver. Bon Iver. I know Bon Iver because of he sings like this, and Justin Timberlake did an unbelievably hilarious imitation of him. Did you ever see him, Justin Timberlake's imitation of Bon Iver?
I did, yeah, and it was a very good one.
It was the sketch where Jay Farrow and Maya Rudolph played Beyonce and Jay-Z, and they just had their kid.
Yeah,
and Fred Armisen came in as Prince. And
he's like weird in the corner.
He was hiding in the corner. and then other artists came in. People were doing artists, and then Justin Timberlake comes in as Bon Iver. But he does it. I mean, I'm trying to remember what the one sort of song that I know. It's a ballad, obviously, because this guy's got, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did. I kind of stopped listening to Bon Iver a little while ago. His new stuff didn't really speak to me, but. I think Skinny Love was one that was pretty big back in like 2008, 2009. He was more of a folksy dude.
Yeah.
But his origin story is really funny because he got mononucleosis and he shut himself in basically a cabin up in northern Wisconsin for an entire month and got addicted to watching Northern Exposure.
Right.
And he just started writing songs in this like delirium, and that's how he became an artist.
What was this? What was the one? I mean, he had a hit, like one big hit, and I think I can't remember. And I loved it. I thought it was great, and I actually liked a few other songs that he did. And of course, he covered "I Can't Make You Love Me," which is, of course, one of my favorite songs ever. But I've never heard "Hey Ma," but it's up for record of the year.
I've got a little bit of it here.
Let's hear "Hey Ma." Yeah.
I wanted a bed. While it's living in a coal mine, too time to call your ma. Hey ma, hey ma.
He's not doing the falsetto, really, in this.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I don't mind that. That's all right.
No, it's fine. Next for record of the year is "Bad Guy" by Billie. Is it Eilish?
Yeah, Billie Eilish.
I like her. I like her. She's like, what is she, like 17?
Yeah, she's 17 years old. But you weren't a fan of her SNL performance.
No.
You thought it was...
I thought it was terrible.
It was odd.
But this song, though, I've heard like 8... You know, she was in that stupid box and she was walking on the ceiling. Right? That was her, right?
Yeah, that was her.
It was terrible. I know the song. Everybody knows this song, right? Yeah.
Thank you, oh please, I do what I want when I'm wanting to. My soul, so cynical. So you're a tough guy, like you really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy. Just always...
It's a cool song.
Yeah. So, "Seven Rings" by Ariana Grande. I don't know that song. I know who she is. I don't know the song. I'm old. I'm just old. Do you have a little bit of "Seven Rings" by Ariana Grande?
She actually had to credit Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah, well, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, originally they weren't credited. And they were like, no, you have to credit Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Of course she does. All right.
Nice family-friendly.
We'll get back to these 2020 Grammy nominees. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. We'll read some texts and take some calls. That's where we're here, 312-981-7200. Thank you, Toto. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. if you want to jump in here, talk and text 312-981-7200. We're talking about the 2020 Grammy nominees. So far, Hey Ma by Bon Iver, Bad Guy by Billie Eilish, Seven Rings by Ariana Grande. Those are all up for Record of the Year. Next is Hard Place by Her. You gotta, I don't know what, I have no idea what's happening now. If I have to choose, oh, I know this song. I like this song.
Yeah, she was on Colbert. I'm gonna
lose, oh, I like this. I like this. What if I really like this. I approve. Old Man DiGilio approves. So far, I'm rooting for that one.
I forgot. What do you need? Your wedges or whatever?
Wait a minute. It's got to be here somewhere, right? I don't think it's here. No, I remember we were trying to find it before, right? I am just an old man trying to get some wedges. Oh, here it is.
I am just an old man trying to get some wedges.
Poor old guy was so mad in the KFC. He was just so mad. All he wanted was his wedges. He didn't want some flirty, you know, employee saying, "How you doing, sweetheart?" He was grumpy. He was just a grumpy old dude. He was in front of me. And like every time she would say like, "How are you, honey?" to the customer, or call him sweetheart, he'd go, "Ugh." Just didn't like it. He was just an old man trying to get some wedges. And that's me now. But I like that. I thought that was good. By Her. All right. Talk by Khalid. Do we have that? Is this DJ Khalid? Or is that Khalid?
You know, it's not DJ Khalid.
Khalid.
Well, then what is this? Different, it's a different guy for sure. I've never heard of this dude. If I'm moving too far, can we just talk? Can we just talk?
I've heard this. Yeah.
Started off right. I can see it in your eyes. I can tell that. That's pretty good.
It's all right. It's not as good as Her. So far, I'm rooting for her. Oh, I now this next one I like. Old Town Road. Lil Nas X featuring Billy Ray Cyrus. I like this song.
Yeah, he's already gotten the CMA.
Yeah, which I think is amazing.
I still can't believe that Trent Reznor now is the proud owner of a country music award because he got sampled on this.
Yeah, this is. I like this. I think this is very cool. No more, I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride. Till I can't no more. I got the horses in the back. This is very cool, man. Head is matted black, got the boots black to match. Riding on a horse, you can whip your horse. It's really cool. I think it's cool.
Have you seen the music video?
Yeah, I have.
Just he's in like the hood, just riding a horse, and he's dressed like a cowboy.
It's hilarious.
Everybody's looking at him.
No, I like that very much. I think that's really, really good. So, I'm still, though, rooting for Her. So, these are all Record of the Year. These are all the nominees for Record of the Year. Here's next one. Truth. Oh, I love Lizzo. I love Lizzo. I think she is awesome. Truth Hurts is the song. What about her, like, My Juice? Isn't that her?
Yeah, yeah.
That song rules.
It's getting used for, like, a ton of vodka commercials.
I love that song.
That's a great song.
I love her. I think she's unbelievably cool. And so, all right, let's hear Truth Hurts. Do we have that? That's Lizzo.
I'm 100% dead. Even when I'm crying crazy, yeah, I got boy problems. That's the human in me. Bling, bling, then I solve them. That's the goddess in me.
You could have had a bad, bad, not committal. Help you with your career.
She's great. She's great. I am a big fan of hers, man. I think Lizzo's fantastic.
Yeah, very cool.
I love her.
Well, I was blown away because she did this thing, I want to say, for Variety or some one of those entertainment publications, where she went through 10 songs that really influenced her when she was, like, in high school or something like that.
Which was, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. But one of the songs she talked about was from a band called the Mars Volta, which is my favorite band of all time.
Yeah, no, I know that band.
And I was screaming. She's like, oh, yeah, I used to, like, I really studied the way that he performed Cedric Bixler. And Cedric Bixler, the band's not together anymore. He saw that and he was, like, flattered. He's like, I can't believe Lizzo, who's, like, a modern legend right now, is name dropping the Mars Volta. And I was freaking out because I love both of them. So it was great.
That's cool. That's very, very cool. I just like her. I like everything about her. I like everything about her.
Super positive.
She's fantastic.
You know?
She's fantastic. Love it. All right. And then the last nominee is Sunflower by Post Malone, the guy with all the tattoos on his face. And is it Sway Lee?
I can't even tell you. I don't know.
Post Malone and Sway Lee. S-W-A-E. That would be my guess. Sway Lee. But I know Post Malone. He's the guy with the tattoos all over his face.
And he looks the way that a patch of dirt might smell, like, you know.
No, I agree.
He's kind of gross, but he seems like a nice enough guy.
Well, what is this?
So,
I know this song. I gotta say, despite the face, I like that.
Yeah, he's quite popular.
He's talented, but he looks so stupid with all the tattoos on his face.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta say, I give credit to any guy who's willing to put out a song called White Iverson.
That's pretty funny. So, I don't know, man. This is actually tough. A lot of these are good songs.
Honestly, I think it should be a dead heat between Old Town Road and Truth Hurts. As much as I mean, that song by her, that's a great track.
Yeah.
Great track. But in terms of songs that defined the last, like, year or
I think it's going to go to Lizzo. Because, I think it's going to go to Lizzo.
She's skyrocketed. And I met her way back when I was an intern at a different station.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, like, the nicest person alive.
That doesn't,
like,
surprise me.
She was
but
just
here's
so
the
cool.
other thing is that do they want to go the Billie Eilish way and have her be, like, the youngest person to ever win in any of the categories? Because she's 17.
Yeah, that she's.
And
I
that song is
the,
that song is everywhere.
Yeah, I want to say she's already the youngest nominee.
She is.
Yeah, she's already the youngest nominee. And, yeah, she's incredibly popular. If they're trying to get younger viewers, you know, I can see them really pushing for that. But I mean, out of those three songs, Old Town Road, Truth Hurts, and Bad Guy, I don't know if any one of those would be a bad pick. If any one of those three won, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, not so much with Bad Guy.
No, you're not a Bad Guy fan?
No. But
she's cool. Like, as a person, I enjoy her.
Yeah, I just don't think, I like her. But I really hated her on Saturday Night Live. I was just like, what's happening here?
Yeah, she's got kind of a strange
But like vibe, I've seen her interview, know. I've seen her interviewed and I like her hair. I think she's got kind of an interesting attitude about things.
And her whole story, I mean, that's her brother that performed with her. He's the guitarist and he's a co-writer
on the
song.
Okay. All right.
Cuz her real last name is O'Connell.
Mhm.
Eilish is her middle name.
She Irish?
Probably.
Well, O'Connell.
Yeah.
Billie Eilish O'Connell. I think that's pretty Irish.
Well, I've got some cousins on my Irish side, and their middle name is it's spelled the same way, but they pronounce it Eilish.
Mm.
But it's the same. It's exactly
and they're Irish.
Yeah,
they're on the Irish side.
Yeah, they're on the Irish side, and they freaked out when she started getting popular. Like, oh, she has my name. And they're little girls too, so they're
tweaking.
They're now they're dyeing their hair and doing the whole thing. So,
all right. Well, okay. Well, we'll see what happens. The thing about Post Malone is his face. That's the problem.
A face only a mother could love.
I mean, no, his mother probably doesn't love that face after what he did to it. She probably loved it before he did all that crap to his face. I will say this, though. There was a very amusing bit that Jimmy Fallon did with him where he was on the show one night. And he was on the Tonight Show one night. And Post Malone, the guy with the face issues, he loves Red Lobster. He adores Red Lobster. It's his he says it's his Post Malone's favorite place on earth is Red Lobster. Jimmy Fallon had never been to a Red Lobster. So they filmed a bit where they walked down to the Times Square Red Lobster and Post Malone took him and gave him the Red Lobster experience. Starting, of course, with the Cheddar Bay biscuits.
Naturally.
And then they went like on an all-you-can-eat night. And so there was just this whole bit about, it was Olive Garden.
Oh, we went to the Olive Garden.
It was Olive Garden. Oh, yeah. I got it confused because then it started with the endless breadsticks and all that stuff. You can eat as much as you want and all that. And Jimmy Fallon was like beside himself. Yeah, it was Olive Garden. I'm pretty sure. Can you Google that? I want to make sure I'm right. They're the same company. Red Lobster and Olive Garden.
At least at some point.
They're the same thing. It's just that they serve different style foods. But I think it's Olive Garden. If you just Google Jimmy Fallon, Post Malone.
Yeah, no, it's Olive Garden.
Yeah, Olive Garden. And the bit is hilarious. The bit's hilarious. It's really hilarious.
Throughout the segment, the rapper showcased the unlimited free salad and breadsticks, the complimentary wine samples, and the extra crispy chicken parmesan.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was really a funny bit. Really, really funny. So, all right, why don't we take a break? We went through record of the year. We'll do album of the year next. Do we have song of the year here? Oh, yeah, we do.
Yeah, it's a little bit later on the list.
And then we got best new artist. Those are the major ones. We'll get through those.
Yeah, those are the big categories.
Okay. So, Grammy nominations. If you want to jump in here with your thoughts on the Grammys this year or years past, or favorite Grammy performances, music stuff in general, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Talk or text us right now. Let me guess who requested this.
Go for it.
Ike.
Bingo.
Yeah. So we got two more Billy Idol songs to hear. Yeah, man. Yeah. Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And speaking of music, we are talking about the 2020 Grammy nominees. They were announced yesterday. We've been playing bits of some of the songs. We were talking about Record of the Year a moment ago. And we'll move on to another category. And album of the year. So we've got I, which is not, I'm not doing the beginning of Crazy Train. So it's I by Bon Iver. Norman Effin Rockwell.
Yeah.
By Lana Del Rey. What's that? I mean, I know Lana Del Rey.
I mean, it's her latest album and it's been a huge hit. A lot of these songs I can't actually play.
I would imagine, even considering the title of the album.
Yeah, Norman Effin Rockwell. I believe she had a song that was in the Charlie's Angels reboot. Or at least, it was her, Ariana Grande, and Miley Cyrus. Don't Call Me Angel, Charlie's Angels.
I saw the movie and I don't remember it. Only thing I remember about that movie is Kristen Stewart. That's the really...
Yeah, this is what it sounds like.
Oh, no, I did. I do remember this.
Yeah,
Yeah, no, I know that. It can't be an R-rated song because the movie's PG-13.
Yeah, so that song is fine. But, no, the rest of it, it is a good album. I've listened to it. I'm not a huge Lana Del Rey fan. I remember her disastrous debut on SNL.
Oh, my
People
God.
People were really like, who is this chick? Get her off right now.
Awful. And then the following week, who played her? She came out on Weekend Update. I think it might have been Kristen Wiig. But they came out and just ripped her.
Yeah.
But one of the most legendary disasters of musical performances, of course, was Ashley Simpson.
Oh, my God.
When she got busted, like, lip syncing.
So funny.
And then she blamed the band at the end.
Yeah.
At the end of the show.
Yeah, no. That was a great moment in SNL history.
Jude Law hosted that.
Yeah.
She just started dancing like an idiot.
Yeah, she started like.
And then at the end, she blamed it on her band. And then the next day, when all hell broke loose about it, she blamed acid reflux. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Well, she should have learned something from Wayne Coyne.
Yeah.
You know, drink a little fireball.
Drink a little fireball.
That'll fix your acid reflux.
When we all fall asleep, where do we go? Billie Eilish. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Next, Ariana Grande. Was that something she said to Pete Davidson?
Well, she did a song called Thank You Next.
And is it about Pete Davidson?
It's about all her boyfriends.
Oh, okay.
Pete Davidson is referenced. She gives him the thank you next. And then what was it? He turned around and, not married, but dated Kate Hudson or something? Or some model?
Was it Kate Hudson? Or was it Kate Beckinsale?
It was Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah. How does a guy like Pete Davidson get somebody like Kate Beckinsale?
I don't know. The guy's a goon. I love him to death.
I love him too.
He's a goon.
Yeah. I mean, Ariana Grande too. How does he do that? She's a beautiful young lady. And he is just a goof.
Probably because he's funny.
He is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Very funny. His sense of humor goes a long way.
It really does.
It does. I can speak for that as a not very attractive man. You know, I have made a lot of women laugh, and I think they just go, "All right, you're ugly, but let's go. I'll date you."
Good enough.
I've dated a few women that were way out of my league. Like, seriously, I mean, my friends would be like, "What are you doing with her?" No, I'm sorry. What is she doing with you? Is more accurate. And I'm like, I don't know.
She's major league. You're still in AAA.
She laughed. She laughs at stuff that I say. I guess that might be it. I used to know her by her. 7 by Lil Nas X. 'Cause I Love You Deluxe by Lizzo. And Father of the Bride by Vampire Weekend. Vampire yeah. Weekend is nominated for Album of the Year this year?
Yep.
What the hell? What year is it?
I don't know. They released this album this year after the departure of their longtime guitarist and multi-instrumentalist. And it did pretty well for them. They got a decent amount of critical acclaim. It was a relatively popular album. I think their first one since 2014, I want to say.
Okay.
So it's been in the works for a very long time. I just think the title's hilarious.
Father of the Bride?
Is this part one or part two?
Yeah. Or is it the original Father of the Bride, not the remake with Steve Martin? Okay, so Song of the Year. Here's the Song of the Year. It goes to the songwriters or songwriter. Always Remember Us This Way. Lady Gaga. I don't know. I haven't heard that.
Yes, you have.
Is it in Star Is Born?
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting nominated this year?
Yeah, because they have a weird schedule.
Burning in your eyes. Oh, this is good. I guess I just don't know the titles of these things.
Babe, I want to catch on fire. It's buried in my soul. Like California gold. You found the light in me that I couldn't find.
That's a great song.
Yeah, I honestly found her and her musical performances to be the only tolerable part of that movie.
Oh, come on, man.
Don't get me started on Bradley Cooper doing his best Eddie Vedder.
I thought he was great in it. And the talking voice that he uses in it was because he cast Sam Elliott as his brother.
Right. So he had to sound like Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
No, I understand the choices.
I think he's great in it. I think it's a great performance. And I think he directed the hell out of that movie. I'm a huge fan of that movie.
It's for the birds, man.
No, man, no. I'm a huge fan of that movie. And I got to say, you know, I went in real skeptical because Bradley Cooper never directed a movie before. Nobody ever saw him sing. I was like, what? He writes songs and he sings? What is this? This is going to be a disaster. And I didn't like Lady Gaga. I was never a fan of Lady Gaga. I never, ever liked Lady Gaga. I went into that movie. Was that last year? That was last year.
Yeah, it was 2018.
Yeah. And, well, didn't Shallows get nominated for a Grammy last year?
It may have, because the Grammys are on a really weird schedule, kind of like the Emmys are.
Yeah.
Where you can be like, wait, that show came out this
year. No, that's true. Like... No, this is very true of the Grammys, because I remember you two getting nominated for something off of... All that you, what the hell's the name of that album?
All That You Can't Leave Behind?
Yeah.
2000?
For the 2001 Emmys. And I was like, wait a minute, what?
Came out forever ago.
Yeah. But that's a great song. Always Remember Us This Way. That's a great song. A great song. I can't believe you didn't like that movie. It's so good.
I will give the director of photography a lot of credit, though. That is a beautiful looking movie.
Like, absolutely.
When I look at that movie, that is a beautiful looking movie.
You know, I loved it. I loved it, and I love the opening song. What the hell's the name of the opening song? The first song in the movie.
I couldn't. Is that that By the Wayside?
Yeah,
song?
Yeah. I love that song.
It's called Black Eyes.
Black Eyes. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Black Eyes. And we used to make, oh my God, when we were carrying this, we used to get so sick of hearing these songs.
Yeah, you mean it's 400.
Yeah.
I love this song, man. Love it.
I'm on the phone when I'm on the phone.
I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it. And that's the opening of the movie. And being the skeptical guy that I was like, hey, wait a minute. I'm jamming to the song and we're 30 seconds into the movie?
Yeah. No, they grabbed you. You're not alone in really loving this movie. I know a lot of people that went and saw it like 3 times.
I saw it twice in the theater.
Yeah.
And I've got it at home.
A huge hit, and it clearly paid off for Cooper and Lady Gaga. I thought they performed at the Oscars, right?
Yeah, they performed Shallow at the Oscars.
And I was just like, oh, these two are sleeping together.
They fooled everybody, man. Everybody thought that, and they totally did it on purpose.
I know.
It was Lady Gaga's idea.
I'm sure.
Of course it was. Of course it was Lady Gaga's idea. Yeah. But no, I think I was incredibly impressed with that movie, and I was moved by it. It made me cry. And the final performance by Lady Gaga is unbelievable. And it's just
the song craft is there. I'll say that much.
Yeah,
the song craft is there. The only reason I didn't like it is mainly because I was just like, I've seen it all before. I've seen all this before. Performances are decent.
Yeah, it's the fifth version of the story. I
can't wait for
this one. This one was mostly, as you know, mostly inspired by the Barbra Streisand, Kris Kristofferson version.
Right.
That's the one that it mostly resembles.
Yeah.
It was really fun to watch that movie with my mom, though. One of my mom's favorite movies of all time is the 76 version of Stars Born. And that soundtrack, I know every song on that soundtrack because the 1976 the Barbra Streisand, Kris Kristofferson version of Star Wars, or Star Wars, of Stars, of Star Wars. of A Star Is Born is like one of my mom's, if not her favorite movie. It's absolutely in the top three of her favorite movies of all time. saw it a bunch of times in the theater, had the soundtrack, played it constantly when I was a kid. So I know every song on it, and therefore I love it. And I really, really like the 76 version of Star Is Born, despite the fact that I know it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. But because it was a movie that I grew up watching, and because it was a soundtrack that I heard 80 million times, and because Paul Williams wrote a lot of the songs on it, I have a real soft spot in my heart for it. So when I saw the trailer for the Bradley Cooper version, I'm like, dude, don't be messing around with the 76 version of A Star Is Born. You've never directed a movie before. Nobody's ever heard you sing. You can't write a song. Lady Gaga's a goofball. You're going to fail miserably. And that's the attitude I went in with, was like, don't be messing with the 76 version. And I don't like anything about this movie. And I was completely, I'd be the first to say I did a complete 180 about it. It's one of those movies that I walked in with a preconceived notion and walked out loving it. So, all right, we'll get back to the 2020 Grammy nominees. But we got a break here. We got some weather, and then we'll come back and jump right back into it. 312-981-7200. Got a few more nominees to get to, and we'll tell you all about them after we break here.
It's after midnight. Why are you feeling all right?
Welcome back. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m., 312-981-7200. That is the number. And if you want to join us, either talk or text, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! Another Billy Idol. We got one more to listen to then. Hey, by the way, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So stay tuned for that. All right, we are talking about the 2020 Grammy nominees, and we're going through Song of the Year, and Always Remember Me Us This Way from Star Is Born is nominated for Best Song, and the next one is Bad Guy by Billie Eilish, which we heard already. It's also nominated for Record of the Year, nominated for Song of the Year, and that's usually the case with that stuff, because you know, whatever becomes Song of the Year is usually nominated for Record of the Year. Bring Me Flowers Now by Tanya Tucker. Tanya Tucker is nominated for Song of the Year? Tanya Tucker's been in the business for a long, long time. What is Bring My Flowers Now? What the hell is that?
Well, it's...
All right. It's nominated Best Song. Song of the Year.
On my way, even though one day they'll bury me and Jesse Ray, I just know we're gonna ride again someday. I bring my flowers now while I'm living.
Jeez. Depressed much?
I know, but that's, I like it though.
No, it's good. That's, I mean, really, I've always been a fan of Tanya Tucker. I've always thought she was great. That's talented. I didn't even realize she was still doing the thing.
She's still doing it.
Man, that's good, but geez. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Hard Place by Her, which we heard already. Lover by Taylor Swift. What is this? Is this about an ex-boyfriend? Let me guess. It's about an ex-boyfriend. Is that...
Yeah, it's kind of her MO.
Yeah.
She performed on SNL a few weeks back. I was not impressed at all. I really thought it was poor, to say the least, but this is Lover.
I like this song. I like it. I like it.
I wasn't impressed with her performance of it, though. It's so breathy.
I don't know. I like it. I liked her on SNL.
It's never going to beat that that one song that they remixed with the Screaming Goats.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
I Knew You Were Trouble When You Walked In.
Next song is Norman Effin' Rockwell by Lana Del Rey, which we can't play on the air.
But it is a very good song. I like
Someone You Loved by Lewis Capaldi.
Oh, he's a big hit from Scotland.
Well, let's hear the song. Yeah. Someone You Loved by Lewis Capaldi. Oh, I know who this guy is, I think, you know?
Yeah, he's my cousin Mark, who lives across the pond. He's been turning me on to bands and artists before they were big in the U.S. for many years. And yeah, he told me, he's like, this guy's like going to be the biggest thing in the USA very soon. So here's Lewis.
Somebody to hug, somebody to hold. It's easy to say, but it's never the same. I guess I kind of like the way you numbed all the pain. Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kind of used to being.
I like this song too. I guess I just don't know the names of any songs now, but I hear them and I like them. Like there's like eight songs or right now that we played here. I'm like, oh wait, I know that song. I like that song. I just don't pursue them anymore. I'm too old to go, hey, I want to download that. I just don't listen. I don't do it. If it pops up, I'll listen to it and I like it.
Yeah, well, I'm way too stuck in listening to specific genres, and I like most of these. These are pretty good.
Yeah.
These are pretty good pop songs.
And then finally, Truth Hurts again by Lizzo, who's awesome.
Gotta have it.
So, all right, let's take a break here. We've got the news coming up, and then after the news, we'll wrap it up with the final major category, which is Best New Artist, and we'll talk a little bit about them. And then we got a couple of other Grammy-related things, including Grammy-winning artists who have won over 15 Grammys, which is insane. So that's all coming up. Right here on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back. We've been talking about the Grammy nominations, which were announced yesterday. And now the other major one that everybody really loves is the Best New Artist category. So if it's someone I never heard of, if you know a song, you want to play it for me so that I don't feel like I'm 175 years old?
Can't do.
All right. Black Pumas. I don't know this. Who are Black Pumas?
You know, that's a new one to me as well.
Black Pumas.
Black Pumas.
Are they talking about the animal or the shoes?
They're talking about the animal, it seems like. Here we go.
With all my favorite colors.
Yes, sir.
All my favorite colors. My sisters and my brothers see them like no other. All my favorite colors.
That's good.
That's real good. I think I'm going to pursue Black Pumas.
Yeah.
That's real good.
That's some throwback.
That's a fly. We should play that tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's play a little Black Pumas tomorrow.
We'll do a little Black Pumas tomorrow
for Fly Jams, because that was fly, man.
Very fly.
What do we know about these guys? Is there like a little bio on them or something? Where they're from? What the background is? Because that was good, man. I want to hear more of those guys.
I'm gonna have to make a little trip to Reckless this weekend, but they're a duo from Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Consists of guitar and producer Adrian Quesada and Eric Burton, and they united in 2017 when Quesada was looking for a vocal collaborator. He wanted to find someone to be in a band with.
All right,
him, so.
I'm in.
So it's crazy because the LA Times literally posted a story here early yesterday, who are Black Pumas, the Grammy's most mysterious new artist nominee?
Wow.
So it looks like we're not alone in trying to figure out who these guys are, because that was a great track.
No, yeah. I mean, just 45 seconds of it alone convinced me I want to hear more. All right. Billie Eilish, we know that. Lil Nas X, we know that. Lizzo, we know. Maggie Rogers. Do you know who Maggie Rogers is?
I believe so. This is her hit Alaska. I think this is one of the big ones.
Oh, me, oh my, I thought it was a dream. So it seems.
Don't know it.
I think I may have heard this in a Bath and Body Works once.
Well, yeah, that sounds like it. All right, Rosalia. Do you know who Rosalia is?
Let me see here.
One name. It's R-O-S-A-L-I-A. Rosalia. So I do not know this. Never heard that.
Yeah, just to give you a visual here of what she looks like, who's the famous painter?
Salvador Dali?
No, she Frida Kahlo. She looks.
Oh, she looks like Frida Kahlo.
Yeah, she's rocking the Frida Kahlo kind of like single brow, but she's got gold teeth and fingernails that look like when you take bugles out of the package and put them on and make witch fingers.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting look.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Rosalia.
Rosalia.
Who are Tank and the Bangas?
You're stumping me with
it. Tank and the Bangas. So wait a second. Tank, for the guy from The Matrix, is it a band now?
Yeah, they finally...
Is he in a band now?
He got tired of surfing the underground and avoiding robots. Let's pull a little bit here.
Tank and the Bangas.
So this is from a performance that they did on Fallon.
I like it.
That's interesting.
I've never heard it before. Is she Tank?
I gotta assume that she is Tank.
And the background. And the by the way, the music is great. And
the music is very good.
It's obviously a live band. No samples or anything.
Yeah, it's like a 7-piece band too. Yeah. There's like 7 dudes.
Tank and the Bangas.
Yeah, so I assume that the rest of them must be the Bangas.
Right.
And then she is Tank. But really, Tank could be, I don't know, you know, which one's pink? I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
And then finally, Yola. Y-O-L-A. I love that song by the Kinks. Y-O-L-A? Yola. 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 All right. What is Yola?
So I'm going to play a little bit of Yola. It Ain't Easier. This is coming from her album, Walk Through Fire.
All right. Yola.
Yola. And let's take a listen.
It ain't easier, child. When you find someone to love and you think that's enough. That your work is done. You relax just too much and let a beautiful thing run to rust. No time for singing in the morning.
See, that's good too. What the hell's going on?
This best new artist category is pretty stacked.
It's really strong. It's really strong.
You got
the Black Pumas, Billie Eilish, Lil Nas X, Lizzo, Maggie Rogers, Rosalia, Tank and the Bangas, and Yola. Wow. I hope a lot of these people perform. I want to see them perform.
I would love to.
Especially Black Pumas. I want to see more of these guys. Wow. All right. Well, there you go. Those are the nominees for the most popular or the biggest awards of the night. And so when we come back, we're going to take a break here. I got some weather for you. When we come back, we're going to talk about the snubs and surprises, because a lot of people feel that people were snubbed and there were some surprises. So that's what we're going to talk about. If you guys want to jump in, 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text. 2020 Grammy nominations are out there, and we will discuss the snubs and surprises. And if you have any that you feel were surprise nominees or snubs, artists that you love that you think should have been nominated, 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text.
Just keep it friendly, girl, because I don't want to leave. Don't start clinging to me, girl.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, who requested that?
That's coming to us from they just wanted to say it's from Wisconsin. Someone's listening up in Wisconsin.
Somebody from Wisconsin.
Yeah, they want to hear a little Mac Davis.
A little Mac Davis, star of North Dallas 40.
On your Super Sounds of the 70s weekend.
Yeah.
Just keep on trucking.
You want to see a really funny movie poster?
Sure.
Because, you know, after Mac Davis, because when Mac Davis was cast in North Dallas 40, people were like, what? Because he was just known as a goofy country singer who had like a variety show, and he never acted before. And so when Ted Kotcheff cast him in North Dallas 40, people were understandably skeptical. But he's great in it. He's great in North Dallas 40, which, by the way, is my favorite sports movie of all time. And I'm not even a football fan, but it's my favorite sports movie of all time. And Nick Nolte, unbelievable in it. I can't even explain to you how great he is in that movie. But anyway, so he started making movies after that because, you know, it was like North Dallas 40 was critically acclaimed. He got great reviews for it, made a lot of money. So obviously people came to his house and were knocking on the door and going, would you be in this movie? I want you to just look up a poster for a movie that Mac Davis did as, like, I believe it might have been the follow-up to North Dallas 40. Mac Davis in a movie called Cheaper to Keep Her. And I want you to look at the movie poster because it's pretty legendarily ridiculous. Can you?
God, what is going on with that chest hair?
Yeah.
A love story about women's rights and lefts.
That's the tagline. Women's rights and lefts.
Woo!
With like, and he's got like a vest on or something, right?
He's rocking like a like an Oxford, and two women are just tearing it off.
Oh, right, right.
And it's very strange.
It is an unbelievably awful movie.
There's another one here where it's just kind of his face, and it's the tagline is, Decker thinks he's God's gift to women, and a woman is placing a sticker on his face that says, return to sender.
Cheaper to keep her.
I gotta watch this.
Yeah, I don't know what the specs are on that. Look up who directed that.
And oh,
what's the other cast members? Look up Cheaper to Keep Her, a 70s classic and a great poster.
Cheaper to Keep Her.
Mac Davis. I just remember that was his, I think that was his follow-up to North Dallas 40.
1980.
Oh, no, it's a couple of years after North Dallas 40.
Yeah. Ken Annakin.
Ken Annakin directed it?
Yeah.
All right.
Ken Annakin.
Who are the other cast members? Anybody?
Let's see. Tova Feldsha.
Nope.
Bruce Flanders. Gina Gallego, or however you say that. Stephen Gagnon.
Uh-huh.
Chuck Hicks. Patrick Gorman. Jack Gilford.
Jack Gilford? I know who Jack Gilford is.
Yeah. Priscilla Lopez.
Yeah, it's an all-star cast.
Rosemarie?
Wow.
Yeah.
Rosemarie.
Rosemarie is in Cheaper to Keep Her. Ian McShane.
What? Ian McShane is in Cheaper to Keep Her?
Yeah. He plays Dr. Alfred Sunshine.
Oh, man.
You've got Wallace Shawn as a mugger.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Wow.
Yeah. If you're near a Google machine and you want to see a good visual, check out, do a little Googling machine on Cheaper to Keeper with Mac Davis. It's a pretty special poster. Would you not agree that that's a pretty special poster?
That's a solid poster.
Yeah.
I've seen posters very unlike it. I've never seen anything like it. It's great.
All right. Anyway.
Rose Marie. Poor thing.
So there you go, Mac Davis. That person in Wisconsin who requested the Mac Davis, look up Cheaper to Keeper. Maybe you might not request Mac Davis anymore in the future.
Rent that.
Rent it. Enjoy it. Doc sends us a text that says, Nick, my favorite Grammy performance was Kid Rock with Run DMC and Joe C doing bow with a bow de bang dang digga digga booga digga 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 pop digga or whatever the hell it was.
That's it. I think that's it.
And joined on by Aerosmith for Walk This Way. Kid's entrance was great. At age 66, the only music show I enjoy now is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions. Great intros and bios and great acceptance speeches and performances. I agree. I think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction is awesome. Oh, especially if I like the band.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the Kennedy Center honors as well.
Yeah.
Those are always fun.
I'm not a big Kid Rock guy in the least. And that bomb-ba-dong-ba-dang-a-dang-a-digga-booga-digga-digga-digga. Ridiculous. Have you ever heard when Jeff Garland was just driving around Chicago and he was listening to my show and he called in?
No.
Just on the regular line? This was years ago.
Uh-huh.
He was in town. He was listening to the show. He called in because I was talking about Chicago, the band.
You're right.
And he, like a Chicago, I guess he's like an expert on the band Chicago.
Okay.
He called in, and then we segued into a story about how he was at Wrigley watching a game with Peter Cetera, was in the booth with him, and Kid Rock was there because he threw out the first pitch, and he was going to sing the seventh inning stretch. So he tells this unbelievable story. If you could, I think it's archived on the website somewhere. But he just called out of the blue, and we had him on, and he told one of the funniest stories I've ever heard in my life about his adventures helping Kid Rock sing the seventh inning stretch. It is one of the funniest things that you will ever hear in your life. And it was just out of the blue. He just, like, called. He called the regular hotline. It wasn't even the hotline number. It's unbelievable. One of my favorite things that's ever happened on my show. So, anyway, we got a break here for the news.
Yeah.
Or no, we don't have news.
No news.
I got to get used to this, man.
I know. It's very odd. And when we come back, I think I've got a little bit of that.
Okay.
That
just story. Play a little bit of Jeff Garland calling in and telling the story about Kid Rock singing the seventh inning stretch. It is truly, and of course, because it's Jeff Garland, he tells it beautifully and hysterically and brilliantly because Jeff Garland is a damn genius. And so, yeah. I thought it was a joke. Andy Herman was my producer at that time. And he says in my headphones, he puts up the name Jeff Garland, because we have a computer screen that we look at to see the name of the next caller, you know? And he said Jeff Garland. And I said, are you joking? It's not Jeff Garland. There's no way it's Jeff Garland. He's like, no, I'm not kidding. It's Jeff Garland. He was just driving around listening. And we got some facts about Chicago. He wanted to correct me about some things I was wrong about Chicago. That was why he called in. And then that segued because Peter Cetera was there when Kid Rock was there at Wrigley. It is truly one of the best anecdotes I've ever heard in my life, and he told it on my show. And it's one of the big, great, one of my favorite things ever. So let's take a quick break. By the way, someone says that Halsey was snubbed. Her performance at MTV Europe Awards is amazing. All right. Let's take a break here and come back with more Grammy talk. And I guess we got a little audio from Jeff from a bunch of years back when Jeff Garland called in the show out of the blue to tell the Kid Rock seventh inning stretch story, which is just genius. All right, more coming up.
I lit out one night in June, stoned on the glow of the Texas moon, humming an old buddy Holly tune called Peggy Sue.
Peggy Sue.
With my favorite jeans and a cheap guitar, I ran off chasing the distant star. Buddy Holly could make it that far. I figured
more.
I could.
Mac Davis. His message to everyone is Cheaper to Keeper. Dom, you've seen North Dallas 40, right?
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times.
It's such a great movie.
It's a very good movie.
Yeah. It's hard. When I tell people it's my favorite sports movie of all time, they usually go, what? Slapshot is second. Bad News Bears third. Bad News Bears, my favorite baseball movie of all time. I love that movie. So, yeah, we'll do sports movies at some point. We'll talk sports movies. Isn't this the anniversary of the 40th anniversary of Rocky?
Yep.
40th anniversary of Rocky. That's crazy.
It's remarkable stuff.
Is it 40 years? It's got to be longer than that, right?
No, I think it's more than 40. I want to say...
This movie came out in 77. 76? Maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was it the year before? It's kind of like before Star Wars or after Star Wars?
Before Star Wars.
So 76.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. All right. So anyway, how you doing? We're back and we're going to talk about some of the snubs and the surprises of the 2020 Grammy nominations, which were announced yesterday. And but we got a little distracted because we were talking about Kid Rock. Doc, our listener, texted in and said one of his favorite Grammy performances involved Kid Rock. And that, of course, immediately made me think of the night that Jeff Garlin called in my show just randomly, driving around listening to the show. The great comedian, Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Goldbergs, everybody knows him. He's a genius. And he called in to correct me. We were talking about Chicago. And he called me to give a little more information about the band Chicago, but Peter Cetera got him, that was the segue into a story about him being at Wrigley Field, Jeff Garlin being at Wrigley Field the day that Kid Rock sang the seventh inning stretch, and they wanted him to go up with Kid Rock because Jeff Garlin has done the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley like 20 times.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there, so they were like, hey, Kid Rock's never done it before, never done the seventh inning stretch. Why don't you, go up with him? So we have a little highlight of that.
Yeah, here's a little bit of that.
So it's myself, Kid Rock, and Peter Cetera. Okay? This is who it is. Wait, you're going to love this. This is who it is. So I go up to sing, not to sing, but to go up with him, to take me out of the ballgame with Peter Cetera.
To comfort him, yeah.
To comfort him.
Yeah.
So we're up in the booth, and Steve Stone is doing the games back then with the oh-so-talented Chip Carey. Oh, God, that guy sucks. It gets even better. It gets even better. You're not going to believe this.
Okay.
So he doesn't know the words. So they have the words for him. Ever since Ozzy sang, they have like a printed out word thing for people. Okay? So I love this. He sings a song with that beautiful voice of his.
Right.
Shut up. Okay. So he's screaming the song. He's done. And I don't have to explain this to you. I whispered to him. Yell out, let's get some runs.
Right.
He's like, what? I said, yell out, let's get some runs. So he goes, all right, hey, Chicago, let's get some lunch.
Oh, and there's more to the story. I mean, he was on for a full 8-something minutes, man. And
yeah,
there's more to the story. You know, when you sing in the seventh inning stretch, which I have, even though the mic was off, the mic wasn't working when Patty and Pete and I went up to sing the seventh inning stretch. But when you sing the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley, they give you a personalized jersey with your name on the back. And they give you a box of balls to sign. So, you get a box of Major League Baseballs to sign, among other things. They give you a hat. They give you a hat that on the side it says seventh inning stretch singer. And only people who have sung the seventh inning stretch have that. So I wear that hat all the time and like point to the side where it says that and go, look what I did. But anyway, so there was a really bad call at third by an umpire and everybody started booing. So Garland is up in the box with him, and all of a sudden baseballs start flying onto the field. And he looks behind him and it's Kid Rock whipping baseballs at the umpire. Who made the call. I'm not doing it justice. Obviously, Jeff Garlin tells the story much better. But that was truly insane, that out of nowhere, Jeff Garlin just calls up and tells this insane story. It goes on much longer than that. I don't know how much is archived on the website, but it's worth a listen because Jeff Garlin is brilliant. So, all right. We're talking about some snubs here. Obviously, people are upset about Taylor Swift.
I don't care.
You don't like Tay-Tay?
Listen, when I was in middle school, when she was still kind of country, when she was like a country artist, our middle school music teacher made her made us sing her first big single, which was, God, I can't even remember the full name of it. It was about slamming screen doors, sneaking out late, tapping on your window, and we had to sing it, and we had like a whole hand motion to go along with it. You know, you acted it out with your hands, and I've never really, she seems like a great person, whatever, she's cool, but I have never forgiven Taylor Swift for that, because it was just so traumatizing.
I'm not a fan. I will say this. When she first hit the scene, and she was like cute country singer, pop country singer.
Yeah, yeehaw.
She hosted Saturday Night Live. And she was great. She was absolutely great. She was hilarious and sweet and very, very funny. And she sang a song during her monologue. See if you can find it. It's a Taylor Swift singing, This Is My SNL Monologue. And I don't know when did she break? Like mid-2000s?
Yeah. Probably I'd say later, around 06, 07.
Yeah.
Somewhere in
there. So it's probably around that time. She was dating the werewolf idiot from Twilight.
Oh, Taylor Lautner.
Right. So she was dating the werewolf idiot at that time. Then she probably wrote 5-6 songs about him. But she does this song during her monologue, and it was Taylor Swift. It was called This Is My SNL Monologue. And I love it. I thought it was the most adorable thing ever. And I still... Here we go. What year is this? Does it say?
I like glitter and sparkly dresses, 2009. But I'm not going to talk about that. In my monologue, I like baking and things that smell like winter, but I'm not going to talk about that. In my monologue, la la la, la la la. I like writing songs about douchebags who cheat on me, but I'm not gonna say that. In my monologue, I like writing their names into songs so they're ashamed to go in public, but I'm not gonna say that. In my monologue.
It's adorable. It goes on too.
That's pretty funny.
It's really funny. She was very, very funny on the show too, and they had her in a lot of sketches. And she was good. I just remember really liking her at that point. And then when she started getting all crazy with the hip hop and whatever.
Well, that 1989 album was pretty good.
It was big, too.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, the Kanye thing.
Oh, yeah.
That happened before she hosted SNL, because at the end of the sketch, Bill Hader, Andy Samberg, and I want to say Sudeikis come out, and they're like Secret Service guys with things in their ears, and they have a wanted poster with Kanye on it to make sure that he doesn't run up on stage.
Yeah, because that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, so it was right before that, because like...
just before, yeah.
Yeah, it was just before it happened. But yeah, she was adorable. But she got shut out. For the second year in a row, Taylor Swift can't get any Album of the Year love. After getting shut out at the 2019 Grammys for Reputation, it seemed like Love might fare better. And it had a mostly positive reception, but no dice. Taylor, who has two previous wins in this category, has been denied a chance at a three-peat with either of her latest albums. Okay. She's got enough. Doesn't she have like 45 Grammys? Like,
no.
you mentioned 1989. Well, that was like that. I think it won everything that year, if I remember correctly. That album was huge, and I think she won. I think it won Album of the Year. I think she got like Song of the Year and all that. I think she did very, very well that year.
Yeah, she does. She's got a lot of nominations. But let's see, in terms of actual wins, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. She got 10.
See, I told you, man.
10. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, she won for Album of the Year for 1989.
Yeah, yeah.
Music video for Bad Blood, which was off that. 1989 for Pop Vocal Album. You know, she won a bunch of other stuff for some of her earlier work.
I just remember with the year that Grammys for 1989. You know how every year there's always one person who they take a publicity shot of backstage holding 26 Grammys. You know what I'm talking about? Like they've got their arms in a they're holding a baby, and it's like 10 Grammys. There's always that one person who sweeps the Grammys. I remember her having a shot like that, standing backstage, you know, being Tay-Tay.
Look how precious I am.
Okay, they ask now, where's Megan Thee Stallion?
On a ranch somewhere.
I don't know who that is. It says, just 9 months after Cardi B made history as the first solo woman to win Best Rap Album, the Grammys are back to its BS. At the 2020 Grammys, Cardi B will be the only woman competing in the rap field as a featured artist on a song with her husband called Clout. This in a year with heat bubbling from all corners of the next generation of women in rap. See, especially Megan Knees of Steel, the Stallion. It's just an oversight. It's not just an oversight. It's just dumb. Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah, she's a fellow hip-hop artist, contemporary of Cardi B.
All right. Well, they weren't happy. Vulture.com was not happy that she got snubbed. How about this? No love for the boss.
I think that's honestly a shame, because I went and saw that concert film.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. Some really good work.
Western Stars is the name of the record. It's Bruce Springsteen's most acclaimed solo album in a decade, and yet the Grammys, the one place you'd expect they would absolutely care, somehow missed the memo. He's nowhere to be found on the nominations list, snubbed entirely. That's weird. That's weird. It's Bruce Springsteen, man. He's a Grammy favorite.
Yeah, and they'll usually throw in a few nods for legacy acts. And I'm not trying to downplay how much he's accomplished, but he's, you know, a little bit of an old-timer. But he's still putting out great work.
Yeah, I mean, no, well, this...
Western Stars was great.
This album and this movie, the concert movie, that he also co-directed, is getting unbelievable reviews. And not just from his fans, but from people who, you know, loved it. And like, are you a big Bruce Springsteen fan?
Not huge, but Born to Run is great. I'm a big fan of, Nebraska is a really good album. He's had a great body of work. And yeah. Western Stars, I'm like, yeah, he's convinced me this is a very good album. I like it quite a bit.
Nothing
for him.
Not one nomination. That's weird. He's Bruce Springsteen. I'm not a Springsteen fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never really have been. But people get mad when I say that. And this is always the thing, because people, you know, it's like I don't like Bruce Springsteen. I never really liked Bruce Springsteen. Not a fan at all. I really appreciate his accomplishments, and historically, I see what he's done in music, but it's not my cup of tea. I don't like Bruce Springsteen. And then people always say, it's because you've never seen him live, man. He's unbelievable live. He plays for 3.5 hours. It's unbelievable. You don't like him because you've never seen him live. And I'm like, let me ask you this question. Does he play Bruce Springsteen songs live? Yeah. Well, how am I supposed to like this guy? I might like him live if he didn't play his own music. If he played somebody else's songs, I might like him. You've never seen him live. That's why you don't like him. Oh, all right. That's a good argument.
It's kind of how I feel about the Grateful Dead. I was like, I can't really, even listening to live albums.
I'm not a Dead at all. I went to a Grateful Dead show because Sting opened.
What?
That's the only reason I went. Sting opened at Soldier Field, and it was 1995, I think.
Wow, would that have been the last time that Jerry Garcia, because he died like right after that.
I think that might have been the last show with Jerry Garcia. I'm not sure. There might have been one after that.
It was definitely the last time he was in Chicago was 95, because he died like right after that.
Well, it might have been. Yeah. This was Sting's tour for I want to say Fields of Gold. I want to say it was that tour. And so my friend Mike, who is also a geek Sting fan, like big, huge Police fan, and we both like Sting. We still like Sting, you know, even though a lot of people abandon how much they like Sting. I love Sting. I think he's great. So we went, and Sting was opening act, and we went. And then we were like, okay, we'll stick around and we'll see this. I don't like the Grateful Dead, but it was like it's an experience. We lasted one song, and we left. I'm like, I can't.
Well, yeah, he died. Do you remember roughly what date it would have been or what time of year?
It was early summer. It was in June. You know why it was in June? I remember it was in June because the Bulls were making a run in the playoffs, mm-hmm. and we left and went to Ginger's Ale House and watched the game. Yeah.
He died in August 9th, 1995, right after that.
So that was a couple of months after. So, but yeah, that's the only time I ever saw the Grateful Dead, one song after Sting left. Everybody was walking in and we were walking out. You know what I mean? It was one of those things, we were going against the traffic. All right. Let's take a break here. We got some weather and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the show here.
Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh, Lord, it's hard.
Yeah. Wrapping up Triple Play Thursday with little Mac Davis. Cheaper to Keeper. Make sure you check out that movie. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're wrapping up the show with some more Grammy talk. We're talking about this year's nominees and the snubs and the surprises. And coming up, the news is next from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. GN. All right. So, how about this? Where are Allie's sellout bops? A brave singer-songwriter with tangerine hair dared to ask the important questions. Why do you look so good in those jeans? Why did you come around? The singer Allie Main, and she was on stage at Saturday Night Live in a little movie called A Star is Born. 13 months after the movie's release, however, Allie's sellout bops have been robbed of Grammy nominations. Okay, so they're basically just now, they're asking about fictional characters on how they got snubbed? Because yeah. Next is Jackson Maine.
Oh, man.
So this article is about, now they're just like, what? Why didn't, you know...
No, they're just taking the
mic. The fictional characters in A Star is Born now.
Give it to Allie. Forget Jackson.
I like him.
His grizzled demeanor.
I like him.
Brother Wayside.
I love that song.
Yeah,
And another thing is, not only with the voice like that, one of the reasons why, and again, like I told you, his reason for talking that way, because he's never talked like that in a movie,
never done that.
Because he cast Sam Elliott as his brother, was one of the main reasons. And another reason why he sings like that is because that's a tribute to Kris Kristofferson, who sings like that. Kris Kristofferson sings like that.
Yeah, but I don't know. Kris Kristofferson is great, though. I know he is.
And but, you know, like, Kris Kristofferson's mostly a country guy. The songs on the Star is Born soundtrack are rock. And he's still got that, he's got that voice. Watch closely now. Are you watching me now? That's, you know.
Yeah, no, that's good.
That's what he sounds like. So it's another reason that it was like a kind of a tip of the hat to Kris mm-hmm. Kristofferson in the 76 version of Star is Born. Got that stuff. I love that soundtrack so much.
It's a great soundtrack.
It's Felicious Acres. I'm telling you, I know every song on the 76 soundtrack. I'm not kidding. My mom played it over and over and over and over and over, and I love it. And like I said, Paul Williams wrote most of the music on that.
The man.
Yeah. Let's see. Halsey got burned. Miley Cyrus got burned. Carly Rae Jepsen got burned. BTS egregiously ignored. And there's a whole article about them ignoring BTS. This was the third time that they were eligible, right, to be Grammy nominated.
Yeah.
And nothing happened.
Which is just insane, because the whole K-pop thing...
It's massive.
It's a literal international phenomenon.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they're not recognizing it. What it wouldn't do for the ratings to have BTS on there performing.
Yeah.
It would be insanity.
The 2020 Grammys will be all about the next era of stars. It does skew really young, as we've been talking about this morning. and playing some of the music, it's a very young audience, which is kind of unusual for the Grammys, you know, because they usually get some people been around for a long time, and then you look at those nominations and you're like, what? And they're just nominating because they're old or they've, you know, got a lot of experience. You know, Michelle Obama's nominated for a Grammy.
That she is.
But if she wins, she won't be the first Obama to win a Grammy. Barack has two. Do you think he goes, I've already got one. Now I've got two.
Good for you, Michelle.
Yeah.
I love you back.
Yeah. I think that would be hilarious.
I would love for him to do like a jazz standards album, but kind of do it in the style of William Shatner.
And just have him like talk through it like, with the Barack, yeah, with the Barack pauses. And the,
and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
I love that guy. So, and it says that all the best new artists are dark horses. Megan Thee Stallion, Ari Lennox, or DaBaby, among others, could have been there. But they went with real dark horses like Yola, as we talked about earlier, New Orleans group Tank and the Bangas, and Black Pumas, who, by the way, I was most impressed with of any artist that we kind of talked about this morning. I was most impressed with those guys, Black Pumas. So, all right, real quick, we'll wrap it up with this text. Yola is killing it, a big woman with a big voice from across the pond. She just killed it here at the American Fest this fall in Nashville. She played the Opry for the first time, soulful Americana and country. Good for her. All right, let's take a break. We get the news coming up tomorrow. Our good friends Jeff Tuckman and the great Esmeralda Leon will be here for our Friday show.